That was the number one song on the Sideshow Countdown by Stone Temple Pilots. That was Between the Lines. Hang with us next week. See who's number one, number two, number three. It's a slugfest every week. Thanks to Buck Cherry for coming by, and we'll see you next week.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Welcome to WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to the broadcast. Hi, Jolene Jordan. Welcome back. Wait a minute here.
There we are.
Yeah.
Peter, thank you.
The problem is...
It's a different board.
No one knows what that means.
Digital settings for every person who's on the air. Peter has his own setting, and it's on a different setting, and here we go. You can do it. We'll fix it at the break.
Yeah, we will.
For now, we're cool.
Congratulations to Rima Faqih of Dearborn. She won the pageant at the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino on the Las Vegas Strip, and she is now Miss USA 2010. And you were watching it, huh?
Listen, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed to say that I could not look away from it. I'm telling you, it was a spectacle. I'm very happy for her. I'm happy that Michigan won. I really am. This is not my you know, bag of chips, the whole pageant scene. But I was happy for her on a couple of different levels. I mean, she's from Dearborn.
Right.
And there was some controversy within the community that, you know, about her going and doing this beauty contest. And I'm telling you.
You mean the Arab American community?
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And, you know, so, but she also had a lot of support. But, you know, I can see why the folks who would be against it. I mean, these babes were in... I just still can't believe this exists in the year 2010.
I mean, beauty pageants.
The beauty pageants, these babes in these little teeny bikinis. And then they did profiles, and they had these... There were controversial photos. It's been in the news a little bit the last couple of days of these chicks in fishnets and their boobs just flowing out of their of a corset. And I'm thinking, what am I watching here?
I wish this was television, folks.
Yeah, I use a lot of hand gestures.
A lot of hand gestures here. Yeah. Jolene Jordan is the one who's describing this. I'm Peter Werby. And our phone number, if you'd like to call in, 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. And if you'd like to email us, call talk yes. That's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And welcome to Detroit's most progressive political talk show.
Absolutely. But, you know, I'm not done on this yet. I have two more things to
committed
say
to
about
peace
it.
And social
oh,
and
yeah.
economic
Sorry.
Justice. Go
I,
ahead.
I hate when I cut that one off.
Go ahead.
She was asked, they asked the question, the judges, and they were all hot political hot issues. Remember last year? Miss Prejean or whatever.
Yeah, how soon we forget. Into the mist of history. Carrie Prejean.
Prejean, yeah. And she's asked about gay marriage. And she was against it, right?
Yeah.
And
sitting there looking at a gay judge and says,
asking,
I thank God.
Who's asking the question, right?
Yeah.
Well, she was asked, Miss Now USA, Miss Michigan, was asked about birth control. Mm-hmm. And does she think that it should be included in women's health insurance plans? And she said, absolutely.
All
I was
right.
like, go girl. Miss Oklahoma, on the other hand, gets the Arizona question, and she says, I go, oh, I can't, I, this is why I couldn't turn it. It was just so good. She said, oh, I'm all about states' rights, and I'm
states
thinking,
rights.
Okay, yeah, let's go back to slavery then. Okay, whatever, babe.
Didn't she ever read history? That was the code word for segregation.
Clearly not. She tried to save her own ass at the end by saying, but I am against racial profiling, so I can see both sides of it. And she was the second runner-up. If she lost, I don't know if I could have continued for this evening.
I mean, if she would have won.
If she would have won,
Yeah. Carrie Prejean, who was Miss California and gave the quote, wrong answer. So where is she now? She's going out with Joe the Plumber.
Oh, she very well may. I don't know. She still pops her nose up on, I think, Fox News or something like that.
Well, yeah, they have to.
Anyway.
All right, wait a minute. I want to. Now I'm so confused here with with the different little buttons. But
I can help you. Just keep talking.
I got it.
Oh, okay.
A little musical tribute here. No, that didn't work.
All right. Let's fire it off there.
Yeah, CD2. So then when you hit that, and then it's supposed to start, right?
Yeah, that's actually CD1.
That's CD1.
There we go.
No, that's...
Wrong music. You need to go to CD3.
Oh, okay.
Okay, go to 3.
There you go.
There we go.
No, that's not it.
Oh, Peter. No, you know where you have it?
Oh, yeah,
you have it up there.
Yes, all right.
So hit...
And
AV5. AV5.
Yeah. And this is no joke, my friends. Apologies to Ronnie James Dio, dead at 67.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was ill.
Lead singer after Ozzy Osbourne of Black Sabbath. We mourn him. And
there are
and,
a lot of Dio fans.
Yeah, including us. And
station,
I'm
yeah.
sure you'll be hearing a lot tomorrow, Monday.
Absolutely.
A tribute to the man. And my apologies to those of you who are screaming, I'd rather hear Ronnie James Dio sing than you guys talk.
Well,
but this is a talk show.
But we did
and we wanted to
pay tribute to him.
Pay tribute, pay our last
to
respects.
To his music, yes.
Yeah. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. The nightmare in the Gulf continues.
Yeah,
and
with the mile-long pipe.
Yeah. Well, they have no idea what's going on now. They're thinking there might be this huge plume underwater,
right.
And to the point where the Gulf of Mexico could become the Dead Sea.
Just
could
awful.
Kill everything.
Unbelievable. That was, by the way, not to go back to Miss USA, but that was another question they asked one of the contestants. Do you think BP should be responsible for all of it? Well, she stumbled. And Joan Rivers, who was giving commentary during this, said BP needs to pay for all of it. She got all political. I was like, go Joan.
Yeah, she is, actually.
I love her.
Yeah. But they say they're BP says they're going to. At 1 a.m. Tonight, I'm going to be interviewing Antonia Yuhas, who is an incredible commentator on world oil. In fact, she has a book which I interviewed her about a couple of years ago called The Tyranny of Oil, the World's Most Powerful Industry and What We Must Do to Stop It.
Mm-hmm.
And she has an article. It always kills me that these people that have something really to say, Americans who have something to say, what's our friend, Greg Palast, who has to publish and broadcast in England.
In England, right.
Same thing with Antonia Yuhas. Who has published this in The Guardian over in London. BP spends millions lobbying as it drills even deeper in the environment pays is the name of it. And here's what she says just a little. While the explosion of BP Transocean's Deepwater Horizon drilling rig was a horrific event, it was neither surprising nor unexpected.
Yeah.
BP is one of the most powerful corporations operating in the United States. Do people know all this?
Well,
I
hope they're paying attention right now, because if they don't, buy your gasoline there.
In 2009, their revenues were $239 billion.
Whoa.
It's the third largest corporation doing business in the country. Mm-hmm. It spends aggressively to influence U.S. policy and regulatory oversight. As you can imagine, they want less of regulatory oversight. 2009, the company spent $16 million on lobbying the federal government, ranking it among the 20 highest spenders that year, shattering its own previous record of $10.5 million. So in 2 years, they spent over $26 million lobbying.
Yeah, that's just a drop in the hat to them.
Well, I don't understand it, because there is this little device they could have put on this oil well that would have saved it, but they didn't want to put it on because it cost $500,000.
Right. There was something on television tonight. One of the architects who was drawing up, it was something about plans that BP never even looked at any of them about safety and regulations.
Well, this money, including $530,000 on federal elections, and that's they were limited. And now with this Supreme Court decision, thanks to the Bush appointees to the Supreme Court, they can, instead of spending it, why spend $16 million on lobbyists when they can just finance campaigns for people that are going to say, hey, free market, we don't want any government regulation. But let's see. According to Antonio Yuhas, this money has bought BP great access and would argue, pardon me, many would argue leniency. Now, Eva Rowe testified before Congress in 2007, I personally believe that BP, with its corporate culture of greed over profits, murdered my parents. The Congress was investigating the worst workplace accident in the U.S. in more than 15 years. A massive explosion at BP's Texas City refinery in March 2005 killed 15 workers, including Rowe's parents, injured 180. The U.S. Chemical Safety Board investigated the blast and released a devastating indictment of BP. Quote, the Texas City disaster was caused by an organizational and safety deficiencies at all levels of the BP corporation. The combination, they said, of cost-cutting, production pressures, and failure to invest caused a progressive deterioration of safety at the refinery. Same thing out there. But there is absolutely no reason why we are drilling. Why do I say we? Wrong pronoun. Why they are drilling. Now, I know that the amount of oil being produced in the United States onshore has decreased enormously. And they used to, when they used to talk about offshore drilling, and I get all this from Antonio Yuhas in my interview later in the program, that it they used to they'd say, okay, we're going to have a platform 30 to 100 feet offshore. Now they're going down 25,000 feet. Like that, to, you know, to find it. And it's the kind of deal that if there is an accident, there's no way. It's like nuclear power and nuclear energy. There can be no room for error.
Right, absolutely, which is sadly enough what we're seeing right now.
Let's see, Antonia Yuhas, she works with Global Exchange, Medea Benjamin's group, and you can go to globalexchange.org, globalexchange.org, and if you put a slash Chevron after it. Now, we're finding out, of course, the Federal Minerals Management Service, and man, you think, whoever knows about that stuff?
I mean,
I mean, for one thing, when the dreaded Bush was illegally in power for 8 years, having stolen both elections in 2000 and 2004, he appointed people to the Federal Minerals Management Service that were right out of the mining industry. So guess what? A wink and a nod and BP paying out like $25 million to lobbyists. Guess what? They didn't have very many controls over them. I mean, they claim, oh, they had all these controls. But think about that mine disaster recently, that the number of violations that were cited at the mine, and yet it just kept, you know, perking along there. So we come to find out, let's see, that the Minerals Management Service, or MMS, routinely overruled its staff biologists and engineers who raised concerns about the safety and environmental impact of certain drilling proposals in the Gulf and in Alaska, according to all these current and former agency scientists. And
They were allowed to drill without permits, proper permits.
Yeah, it was required to get permits to allow drilling where it might harm endangered species or marine animals, but it just, hey, a little wink and a nod again. Kieran Suckling says MMS has given up any pretense of regulating the offshore oil industry. And, you know, if this was in the abstract, you might just say, yeah, so what? Who cares? You know, I want oil, I want cheap gasoline and all that. Well, now, I mean, this could sink a good portion of the American economy. Think about the fishing industry, the tourism industry,
the
related things that support that. This is a nightmare that could kick us back into recession. The agency, according to Suckling, says the agency seems to think its mission is to help the oil industry evade environmental laws. Let me see. I have one other thing here. The scientists, none of whom wanted to be quoted by name for fear of reprisals by the agency. What is going on here? What kind of, you know, this is a democracy. Yeah, well, you sure don't want to offend the higher-ups, do you? or by those in the industry, said they repeatedly had their scientific findings changed to indicate no environmental impact, or had their calculations of spill risks downgraded. Said one scientist who worked for the Minerals Agency for more than a decade, you simply are not allowed to conclude that the drilling will have an impact. If you find the risks of a spill are high, or you conclude that a certain species will be affected, your report gets disappeared in a desk drawer, and they find another scientist to redo it, or they rewrite it for you. I mean, and I don't know, maybe this isn't new news. A lot of this has been in the mainstream, but it gets back to, why are we stuck with spills and wars in order to maintain this oil economy? You know, you still got these conservatives yelling, drill, baby, drill, which is now spill, baby, spill, right?
Yeah.
But apparently, according to this report from the Associated Press, pardon me, the Gulf of Mexico oil spill hasn't stained President Barack Obama, nor dimmed the public's desire for offshore energy drilling.
Right.
People are still,
it's not surprising to me at all, Peter.
Although, of course, it's mostly Republicans who want to do the drill, baby, drill spill. I mean, these people are nihilists. I mean, in other words, it's at some level, they're all about destruction.
Yeah.
And they, it is sort of pathological. And I think part of it is, if they really said, well, we got to have a lot of oil and yada, yada, you know, and because the U.S. energy needs are such, it's this knee-jerk reaction to environmentalists, people who love and cherish things, in this case, the world we live in, its natural being. So they say, oh, these liberals, environmentalists become liberals because people that want to save
right.
the environment want our nest.
How horrible of us.
Yeah, our nest, not to be spoiled, these become liberals. And liberals are this negative category. Let's see. The poll found that the public still supports the idea of drilling offshore by 50% to 38%, while Republicans favor it by a 3-to-1 margin. Democrats lean towards opposing it 52% to 36%. So these Republicans, they're totally crazy people.
Absolutely. And they keep proving it. I mean, over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. And so, by the way, spills are just part of the process. That if you listen to the show for a long time, you've heard me say that oil usage is toxic at every step of the way, from the oil head to the shipping to the refining to the burning to the disposal.
That's the truth.
Yeah. And it happens everywhere. Let's see here. No one's tallied the damage worldwide, but it includes at least 200 square miles of ruined wildlife habitat in Alberta, Canada. More than 18 billion gallons of toxic wastewater spilled into the rainforest of Ecuador, and a parade of purple-black oil slicks that skim across Africa's Niger Delta, where more than 2,000 polluted sites are estimated to cleaning up. There's these big lawsuits against Chevron by the Ecuadorian, maybe government even, at least some peoples, and there may be native people. And this is why
there should be.
My guest at 1 a.m., Antonia Yuhas, her project is the Chevron Project. So as I said, you can go to globalexchange.org/Chevron. And this all began when in the 70s with the so-called oil crisis.
Yeah.
It was an oil crisis for a nation and a culture that wanted to continue on a poisonous fossil fuel path. It should have been a wake-up call to say, hey, these guys got us by the throat, and they've cut off the oil supply to us. The Arab countries did that in 1972, remember?
Yes.
Or you
recall.
Recall.
It happening.
Yeah, right. And
I was here.
Okay. Yeah. And so that ought to be it. Okay, we are getting off this. How fast can we get a Manhattan Project, what they called the race to get the atomic bomb during World War II, to get off of fossil fuels? As an indication, and this in some ways is more show than go, but President Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the roof of the White House and began, he wasn't going to cut, everybody's in bed with the oil company.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he wasn't going to just, cut it off like that. But it was beginning to raise a consciousness that this is disastrous to our health of our species, the human species, and also to all the other species, flora and fauna.
I remember in the 70s, my mom being all about ecology. I remember bumper stickers and things like that, and she was really into it. So I know exactly of what you speak.
But as soon as Ronald Reagan, who kind of rigged the 1980 election as well, I mean, he didn't steal it the way Bush stole 2000 and 2004. His first act, I remember his first act, by the way, of Ronald Reagan, who, why there's anybody who thinks that he is anything other than probably the worst, maybe worse than Bush. Possibly worse than Bush, although it's, you know,
possibly
quite a race.
Possibly worst ever.
Yeah. when he announced his candidacy, he went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, which was it was an odd place for a Republican.
Philadelphia, Mississippi. Okay.
Yeah. This is where three civil rights workers were lynched.
Oh.
Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner. Is that his name? Cheney. Yeah. Yeah. By law enforcement guys that beat him with chains and then killed him and sunk their bodies. This is where Ronald Reagan went to announce his presidential candidacy, and it was the signal to the Democratic South that now you have a new home.
That's disgusting.
You used to have a home in the racist sector of the Democratic Party, but the Democrats had made a commitment to racial justice, and now you can come to a new home in the Republican Party, and that's where they've been ever since. Now, I'm not saying everybody in the Republican Party is a racist, but every racist is in the Republican Party. and then, upon taking office, the first act that Ronald Reagan did was to take down the solar panels off of the White House.
Oh my gosh, I had forgotten about that.
Yeah. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And there's some open lines for you. Let's see how this ties in to this other thing. Yeah. And this is, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. I mean, we have a situation, folks, where, we're looking at some of the same definitions that are occurring in Greece that are happening here in the United States.
Yeah.
And I said last week, whenever you hear the word austerity, even if you're not, maybe this is the first time you've ever heard this show, or you're a Riff listener who's here, understandably, at 101.1 for the great Riff rock and roll. Made Riff one of the great rock and roll powerhouses, and not just in Detroit, but in
the country.
In the country. Yeah, absolutely.
No question.
But, and you're going to say, oh, I don't know, I'll listen to this dude for a little while.
doesn't everyone know who you are by now in this town?
They might not know. People. But
maybe.
In any event, I want you just to key up for the one word that I mentioned last week. Oh, you weren't here.
I was not.
You were here, and I said the one word was austerity. Now, so you say, I'm not interested in politics. How do you say it like that? You can say, I'm not interested in politics. I got to work, I got to go to school, or I'm looking for a job, or
I just want to hear some buck cherry.
Yeah, I don't, whatever. But there's one word that you have to listen for, and that is austerity. Because no matter what you're doing, you got all these people, you're going, oh man, what is this guy's got a suit on? He must be lying, you know, or you can't know. You hear this guy, how do you know? He's on the left. I don't know. Is he right? Either somebody on the right, is he right?
It's very confusing.
It's very confusing. But here's the one word. Here's the one word. Doesn't matter who enunciates it, who says it, who speaks this word. It's austerity. Because as soon as they say austerity, who do you think they're coming for? They've got you in their sights. And who is the they here? This is the people that control things. Remember, I've said this all along. We're in this recession now. People are getting laid off. Jobs are disappearing. And all of that, you never did anything wrong. Your parents never did anything wrong. Wherever you're situated, whether you're a parent or grandparent, what I'm saying is that if you're suffering from this recession, it's not because you made a mistake. It's the big guys that made a mistake. And they're trying to cure it now. They've got all sorts of plans and schemes, and some of it, it was awful. I mean, think about banks being bailed out.
Yeah.
The guys that caused it are getting rescued, right, rather than the people that were victimized by it. But because of the nature of this economy, because we all thought, these guys are in control. They all got suits on. They must be pretty smart. You know, listen to them, too. Listen to the way they talk. They got to be smarter than me. Or you must just think, man, these rich guy fat cats, they're in control. I'm just a little guy living in Livonia or St. Clair Shores.
Yeah, I've got no say in
anything.
What
the hell can I do? You know? And there's some truth in that. But anyway, you've got to be self-protective. You got to protect yourself. You got to protect your family. You got to protect your kids. If you're a kid, you got to think about protecting your parents. Maybe your parents are too busy working. But here this is in the New York Times in the business section, which I've started reading first. Now forget the news. Here's where it's all about. This is by David Leonhardt, who's one of their economic writers. He says, it's easy to look at the protesters and the politicians in Greece and at the other European countries with huge debts and wonder why they don't get it. David Leonhardt gets it, of course. All those people carrying out general strikes in Greece, they don't get it because, well, here, let me go on.
And some people probably don't even know that anything's going on in Greece.
Yeah, well, they're having austerity programs in order to bail out Greece, that the country that might go belly up, if it goes belly up, it would ripple across the world, and they're worried that Portugal and Spain could be next.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, David Leonhardt says, the Greeks have been enjoying more generous government benefits than they can afford. No mass rally, no bailout fund will change that. Only two things, he says. Benefit cuts or tax increases. Or, believe it, they mean both. So here's where austerity comes in. You get less benefits and you get higher taxes. Yet in the back of your mind comes a nagging question. How different, really, is the United States? The numbers on our federal debt are becoming frighteningly familiar. This is very true. The debt is projected to equal 140% of gross domestic product within two decades. And again, if you figure, what the hell does that mean? I mean, it is just a bunch of figures. You know that
it's very large.
Yes. Yeah. Or that old saying from 100 years ago, figures don't lie, but liars can't figure. Yeah. Add in the budget troubles of state governments and the true shortfall grows larger. Greece's debt, by comparison, equals about 115% of its gross domestic product today, the GDP. The United States probably will not face the same kind of crisis as Greece for all sorts of reasons, but the basic problem is the same. We have not figured out who's the main, the politician, spendthrift, as some may be, are not the main source of the problem. Guess who it is? You!
We
are! We are. I am. Jolene is. Your mom and dad are. You know, just you working your butt off.
So why is it our fault, Peter?
Because we have not figured out, says David Leonhardt in the Times, the kind of government we want. We're in favor of Medicare, Social Security, good schools, wide highways, a strong military, and low taxes. Dealing with this disconnect will be the central economic issue of the next decade in Europe, Japan, and in the U.S.
Ooh, scary.
And they're going to do it by taking it out of our hides. That's the way it's going to come down. Benefit cuts, for sure. And you go, all right, because all those people are on welfare. Well, there's not very many people on welfare. That's not a big problem. There are big problems with what we have considered, what are called entitlements, which are Social Security and Medicare,
mm-hmm.
Medicaid as well. Okay. But the big ones, like half of medical care in this country is already financed by the government. So there is universal health care, single-payer health care, the government for half the population as it is. But they're talking about, well, maybe the retirement age can be 70, maybe we can cut back on Social Security benefits. Screw grandma and grandpa.
Yeah, I mean, they're who are barely getting by it as it is.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and because we just don't want to pay a lot of taxes, and so maybe then, maybe we can keep things as they are. Maybe they're not so good right now for a lot of us, but we can just raise our taxes. You know the way they like that, those sort of general, what would you call them? Pronouns? You know, I don't know, a pronoun? I don't think so. But anyways, here's where it really is. This is in USA Today, not exactly a commie publication. Afghan war costs now. It's hard, bad hard to read as a sentence. Afghan war costs outpace Iraq. Let me forget that. The monthly cost of the war in Afghanistan, driven by troop increases and fighting on difficult terrain, has topped Iraq costs for the first time since 2003, shows no sign of letting up. Pentagon spending in February, the most recent month available, was $6.7 billion in Afghanistan and $5.5 billion in Iraq. So that's $12.2 billion a year.
Yeah.
Now, I can't do multiplication tables very well, but I know 12 times 12 is 100. Do you know that?
144.
Okay. Yeah, I should have known. You'd know.
Don't ever ask me math questions.
You did it. Afghanistan will cost nearly $105 billion in 2010 fiscal year that ends September 30th, including most of $33 billion in additional spending requested by Obama and pending before Congress. Iraq will cost about $66 billion in fiscal 2011. Afghanistan is projected to cost $117 billion, Iraq $46 billion. To date, Pentagon spending in Iraq has reached $620 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
That's where it all is, folks, compared with $190 billion in Afghanistan. So we are talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, and this doesn't even take into account all the hidden costs of giving benefits to the veterans, debt service from everything we've had to borrow to finance this.
Yeah.
So if we want endless war, and this war in Afghanistan is not necessary, the war in Iraq was never necessary. Remember, it was all based on lies.
Yep.
The country's going to hell again. Of all the sacrifice of lives, Iraqi and American, of the fortune and our tax dollars that have flown into the most corrupt hands in Iraq and in Afghanistan as well, and it is going to go on forever. It's like 1984. It's going to be endless war.
Yeah.
And this is where our money's going.
Yeah, you know, and then all of these folks pop up after Obama is elected, and I'm not saying that I support everything he does by any means, and they blame it all on him, and it's his out-of-control spending. Well, you know, BS. I blame Bush.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's all political and Bush's, what's his name now? Obama, right. sometimes you talk about Afghanistan, it's a little hard to differentiate.
Right.
In fact, Obama has escalated Iraq, and he's got a plan. And the plan is what? I mean,
is and more.
Yeah, General McChrystal said, right now, no one's winning. Like that. So hundreds of billions of dollars later, nobody's winning. And what happened in Iraq? We got rid of Saddam Hussein, and so what? I mean, there never were any weapons of mass destruction. And you say, well, we got rid of this dictator, which is good. But usually you don't like to get rid of dictators with thousands of casualties, tens of thousands of casualties when you start talking about U.S. wounded, and hundreds of thousands of deaths and injuries of the people that you're allegedly trying to liberate.
Right.
So it's been a disaster, and that there is not the courage of anyone to talk about we have to end hostilities there in both places. And now, I mean, what has happened in Iraq is so out of control that there's probably more of a chance that there could be a political solution to Afghanistan. Because the Taliban, for one thing, they never were our enemy. They wanted all of about cooperation, and they let these right-wing religious gangsters, I guess, hang out in these mountains far from Kabul. It wasn't like they were connected with them directly, and they wanted to be pals with the U.S. They wanted to be part of the pipeline and all of that, and the same while enforce their insane religious tyranny on everybody else. So they were horrible. They're absolutely horrible. But now they're saying, listen, we will make a deal, and the Taliban are saying, and we will guarantee that we will not allow anybody to launch attacks from our soil on foreign countries. And there actually is some behind-the-scenes negotiations going on.
Yeah, and looking the other way, the poppies and everything that.
Yeah, all right, we got to let you have your hair on. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
It all starts with having a good pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend for why spring is the best time to replace your gutters. Got a soggy backyard from all the rain? It's not too late for repair. We'll give you solutions, and we'll help you get your house in peak warm weather condition. Pat Kelly of Kelly Brothers Heating, Cooling, and Standby Generators sits down with us on the Contractor's Corner. Hire It Done Spotlight on the latest home improvement products, our money-saving tip of the week. We'll head back to school at Hire It Done University, and we're going to teach you how to avoid getting scammed. Plus, I'm going to take your house calls live. All this Saturday, beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Riff.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Giving a new graduate a high-tech phone is smart. Giving them a high-tech phone from Verizon? Smarter. Think about it. They're entering a world of job hunting and networking. Or one of traveling and couchsurfing. Either way, they want to stay connected from anywhere. Good thing Verizon has affordable devices to keep them in touch. Like the LG Cosmos, an out-of-this-world texting machine. Now buy one for just $29.99 and get a second one free after a $50 mail-in rebate debit card per phone. Plus, keep your grad connected to the whole family with a family share plan that lets you add lines for just $9.99 monthly access per line. You're smart. Now get smarter and get great value plus the network that works when it matters most. Visit Verizon Wireless, verizonwireless.com, or call 1-800-2-JOIN-IN. Based on nationwide family share plan after first two lines for $69.99 monthly access. Both phones require new two-year activation. Early termination and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Talking about the oil spill and
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, where all our money's going. Yeah, that's right. The recession, and we're hundreds of billions of dollars in the hole because of Bush, and we got the oil spill because of Reagan. And here, there is a candidate for the Senate seat from Florida named Marco Rubio. And he told an anti-gay marriage group on Saturday that the country is relying too much on the government, in part because of the breakdown of family and faith values over the last 50 years. I don't even want to go there. All right. I mean, you could argue.
Blah, forever. Blah, blah.
Yeah. But here's what he's talking about. The country is relying too much on the government. America, he said, became the greatest country because of its strong society where people did not sit back and wait for the government to act. They did it themselves. This guy ever hear of the New Deal? Or maybe he wants to have a thing where you don't have wage and hours laws, you don't have safety rules, you don't have a minimum wage, you don't, you know, all
the
that
wild,
stuff.
Wild
you
west.
You don't have Social Security, you don't have Medicare. So Rubio, who has got the Republican nomination for governor locked up, spent the day reinforcing conservative values, capped with a speech before the group that led the effort to put a gay marriage ban in the state constitution. Is there a little disconnect here? Wait a minute here. Let me go back here. The country is relying too much on the government. And then he's talking before the group that led the effort to put a gay marriage ban in the state constitution.
Exactly.
Yeah. He said the strongest institution in society is the family, and that children raised in stable families are privileged no matter what their income. Well, there's a 52% divorce rate, number one. And number two, that the strongest institution in society is no way in the world the family. It is the corporation.
Yes.
Come on.
There's really no arguing with that one.
and Rubio says, we cannot continue to allow this over-reliance on government to replace the cornerstone institution that has made the American experience possible. Well, how would he have had the family deal with the collapse of Morgan Stanley and the rest of these banks and AGI. AGI. And how would he have the family deal with the environment? So in other words, this is more of this Reagan nonsense, that he wants less government regulation of corporations and more government control over our lives.
Yeah, it's
no,
pretty
I mean,
twisted.
They would say they didn't, yeah. Let's see, and here, again, abortion opponents fought passage of President Barack Obama's health care overhaul to the bitter end, and now that it's law, they're using it to limit coverage by private insurers. So they're using the law. Or here, in a defeat for major Wall Street banks. Wait a minute. Did Werby actually utter those words? Did a Wall Street bank actually suffer a defeat? But they did. The Senate on Wednesday rejected a Republican effort to ease some of the tight new rules included in the bill for trading derivatives, those complex financial instruments that none of us understand, but they're making them hundreds of billions of dollars and destroying our economy. Anyway, they were at the center of the 2008 financial collapse, and the Republicans tried to ease some of the tight new rules. Well,
it's when it's convenient.
Yeah,
you know?
In other words, these people, and we'll get to the hypocrisy. Jillian can't wait for that.
I'm drooling.
Well, it's a horrible sight, folks. Let's get you on the air. Remember, you want to talk about the oil spill. Here's Kim in Highland. Kim, hi, it's Peter and Jillian. Thanks for being our first caller on WRIF tonight.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I have a goofy question. I don't know the answer. I hope you do. When they are drilling, sucking all the oil out of the earth, doesn't that kind of like leave a void?
Wow.
And what happens to that?
That's a really good question.
Then maybe
earthquakes? I don't know.
Well, I don't think it causes earthquakes.
Well, but, you know, I get what she's saying.
In other words, it filled up space. You take it out, and then it could crunch, crunch.
Well, it could create, you know, all of these things that are happening around tsunamis and things like that, because we're messing with Mother Earth's blood.
Yeah. What was that song we used to play, Don't Mess with Mother Nature? Well, I'll tell you what, Kim. We'll throw it out to people that
great
know
question.
A lot more about this stuff than us, because we don't know the answer to this. Big Mama Thornton.
Oh, gosh.
Remember Big Mama Thornton?
Passed away. It's been a long time.
Yeah, we used to play that on our national show. Yeah. All right, here's Paul in Madison Heights. Paul wants to talk about the oil spill. Paul, you know the answer to that technical question? I suspect nothing happens when you extract the oil, eh? You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi, how are you, Peter? How are you, Julie?
Good.
Good, hi.
Good, yeah. Well, I've been reading quite a bit every day since it's happened. I was, matter of fact, when it was still on top of the water, I was very concerned that it could crack off, you know, and obviously as it went down, it kinked the pipe, and that, you know, a couple times, and then cracked off and rested at the bottom of the ocean there.
What do you mean, the pipe or the rig?
Well, the rig.
Yeah.
But as it went down, it made things a little more complicated. You have this, you know, this pipe, well, if you will, rogue pipe, you know, swinging around down there, possibly, yeah, to make things more complicated. Yeah, just the complete, just unchecked measures that went, just like everything, step by step in a disaster that happens, it almost unfolds itself. And then as you look back, you say, wow, this is where we're at.
Well, yeah, and as I said earlier, Paul, that there's no room for error here. I mean, there is room if you're drilling offshore 30 feet, 100 feet, like they used to do, and what they called offshore drilling. You start doing it down a mile or so, and what do you do? I mean, it's like so far we haven't had any major leaks of this stored nuclear spent nuclear fuel that's building up at all the plants, including ones pretty close to us, probably pretty close to everybody. And what can we do if that occurs? We don't have any answers for it. And that's what we're relying on.
No, I know. I have an answer.
Yeah. Put your head between your legs.
Kiss your ass goodbye.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
That's what
appreciate
we do.
It. Yeah. I think that's about it.
Sorry to be negative.
Yeah. Here's Mike. Mike's in Sandusky, Ohio. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Sandusky, Michigan, bud.
Oh, okay. I didn't know there was a Sandusky.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
You
Sorry.
Knew that.
I did. Those damn Ohioans, they stole part of our, you know, the Ohio War, they stole part of our land, and then they stole our name of our Sandusky, Michigan. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right, a couple things. First, that guy that says we can't blame the government, is he on crack or what? The government got us into this mess.
Well, the government acts at the behest of the corporations.
Yeah, well, that and secondly, with all the drilling for the oil and the spills it created and everything else like that and the wars and stuff, isn't that a lot like a guy sitting there sucking on an oxygen tube, chain smoking cigarettes?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Can you not see what's going on? Yeah, I guess I don't understand why the government cannot see what's happening with the oil and everything else.
Well, you know, there when things get to a certain point, and we're just talking technologically, or who knows, maybe we should be talking politically too. There you know, there has to be revolutions, and we've spent the, you know, the wheel's been turning, and so we've been on oil for 150 years or something, or when it, you know, when oil exploration began and usage began, and we're coming to the end of the cycle, and it's the question is, are we going to be able to manage this sensibly, or are we going to make the transformation this terrible situation? And I'll tell you, it doesn't look good, unfortunately. All right, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Some lines opening up at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Leah. Leah's in Port Huron. Hey, Leah, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're good.
Can we talk about guns?
Sure.
Well, unfortunately, a half hour after I got home from church, my best friend that I have known since the fifth grade called and told me her cousin got shot. Her four-year-old son died along with her cousin Carrie, and her six-year-old named Heaven is in Children's Hospital as we speak, fighting her for her life. Also, he shot an uncle. Four adults got shot. Two kids got shot.
Is this Detroit?
I know. I just read.
This was in Clinton Township, Macomb.
Yeah.
It was just on the news all day.
Hey, you're right. I just read about it.
It happened last night.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking.
Right.
Another one of those casualties
crazy,
of the gun culture.
The crazy gun people.
Yeah, I wouldn't say casualties. That's craziness, psycho. I don't understand. What could be so wrong that you could kill children and your woman that you're supposed to love and family members, you know? He barricaded himself, and then not to even shoot himself. He barricaded himself in a house, and he's now in jail.
Oh, well, he'll be suffering.
if you're going to shoot four adults and two kids, why wouldn't you have shot his? Why wouldn't he have shot himself? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's usually been the M.O. lately.
Right.
These men act out this uncontrollable rage, and I mean, how could anything be that bad? I mean, I could almost see the only murderous rage is somehow, you know, revenge for a similar act. Not that I think that this is permissible or supportable, but because you know, someone broke up the relationship with you or cheated on you or whatever the excuse is. I mean, to take lives and then take your own? I mean, come on.
Todd, two wrongs don't make a right. And
well,
I do also think it could be not uncontrollable, but a control issue. He had to feel in control of these kids and this woman and this woman's uncle, and two people are dead.
So he got the big old gun out and went crazy. That's so sad.
It actually, I read the article in the Detroit Free Press, and it said that he was this just control freak who said, you know, he wanted to control who she talked to and everything like that. But everything, you know, men are like that all over the world, unfortunately, or a lot of men, not all men, not me. But here, it's so often, given that there's, 150 million men, we don't get out of control that much, even with all the violence against women, which is pretty high for a Western industrial country. Probably the worst, you think about the most, I would say probably the highest level of violence against women and children of any of the Western industrial countries. And, what is it? What is it in the national psyche? Any men or women have any ideas about this? But Leah, I mean, you read about this and you forget there are some there are people that are close to it. Well, maybe we can get some more thoughts about it. Thank you, Leah, and I'm sorry that everybody involved had to suffer this, because one guy lets his rage dominate everything else. All right, thanks a lot. Bye. Wow. All right, let's see here. Here is Eric in Ypsilanti. Eric, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, PW and JJ.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine.
What's up, Eric?
Not much. I just want to say, I know I've been a little too harsh with this administration. I mean, you got to thank God for lowering taxes for those of us.
Well, he did.
He did.
Yeah, all the baggers. All the tea baggers have disappeared, kind of, haven't they?
They'll be back.
They'll be. No, I don't think they. I think they spent.
Implode.
They kind of used it all up too quick. They were great for media. They were a big media creation, really. And so they were all whining and crying about, we've been taxed too much, when, as you said correctly, Eric, taxes are going down. Taxes are going down nationally. And where was the other thing? Michigan state taxes have dropped, personal taxes, as well as taxes on individuals on the federal level, and including Barack Obama's tax cut for 90% of us. So
there is good news.
That's good, yeah.
But still, what about jobs and everything? And the oil spill, beef, I think BP should have like inspectors outside their company, like do a daily inspection on the oil refineries.
Well, I mean, what they do that with the mines doesn't do a damn bit of good, because they're in the pockets of them. And I mean, now, you know, the Barack Obama said, this is this, what did he call it? I think like sweetheart deal or something like that is going to end. But you need regulation. When everybody has rules. You have rules within the family, I mean, that hopefully that are, you know, agreed upon jointly by the adults and not enforced by a control freak with a gun, you know, or just a control, a psychological control freak. But with elements, with institutions within our society, or I don't know how many you're going to, government has to be severely regulated, and that's why the founding fathers put in the Constitution with its limits and guarantees. But with institutions that are so much larger than the individual, or an individual neighborhood or community or a town or a state or even a country, you have to have the most incredibly strict regulations restrictions imaginable. And people always say, oh, man, you know, I'm regulated and this happened. Well, whenever you have bureaucratic regulation, you're going to have a lot of bureaucratic BS. No doubt about it.
For sure.
But as long as you have these freebooters, and remember what happened by the corporations in the 19th century when they first began? Man, they were horrible. They treated everybody horrible. They killed generations of people at the most arduous labor. I'm talking about the industrial sector right now. And even people that were in like the white collar sector. Up until the New Deal, the Franklin Roosevelt programs in the 1930s, you could work all your life at a white collar desk and then no money because you were put out the pasture, mm-hmm. right? With nothing, with nothing. Hopefully, your family could take care of you. So this is a system that desperately needs extraordinarily tight regulation. And the more you can get away from the bureaucratic regulation, the better off you are. And the problem is with this society that all the regulations are bureaucratic. But better better the bureaucratic regulation than limited regulation like these conservatives who are really just the mouthpiece of the corporations, the powerful people, who, for some reason or other, I don't get it. They're not all rich or anything, but they sing the same song as the bosses of the ultra-rich. Well, let's take a break. We'll be right back. Open lines, and here is Mr. Announcer to give you the number.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my life.
time.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronix is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station. 101. The Real Riff.
101. WRIF.
The Riff.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks. 101 The Riff.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. That's the old Mr. Announcer, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Well, that's okay.
That's all right.
Yeah, we can handle him. Here's a new feature, although we've had the content before. Huh.
This could be about a bunch of people.
Yeah, we got some. We got quite a few. All right.
More, we'll get the dust, Peter Werby.
More conservative hypocrites. Man,
oh.
These guys, they just won't quit. This is about a guy named, and I'm not even sure how to pronounce his last name. It's R-E-K-E-R-S.
I'd say Reekers.
I'm going to say Reekers. George Reekers, according to Frank Rich in the New York Times yesterday, now 5 seconds into Monday we are. A heaven-sent rent boy is the name of his column. This is incredible. Go to nytimes.com and go to the, what's it called? Commentary? Not commentary.
It's the op-ed.
Opinion.
Opinion, yeah.
George Reekers is in a class by himself, even in the era of Larry Craig and Ted Haggard. I hope you remember. Larry Craig was the senator from Idaho.
Senator Wide-Stance.
Senator Wide-Stance.
He was trying to hook up with guys in airport bathrooms.
Minneapolis. Yeah. And he said, and he was tapping the foot of an undercover cop in the bathroom.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah, and he said that he was, and he takes a wide stance.
So we always called him. On a variety of issues.
Yeah. We always called him Senator Wide-Stance. Ted Haggard, and always voted for every anti-gay law that came down the pipe.
Very important part of the story. There.
Ted Haggard doing speed with a male prostitute.
Ted Haggard, the Reverend.
The Reverend Ted Haggard, yeah.
Right.
So it turns out that George Reekers is a Baptist minister, a clinical psychologist with a bent for, quote, curing homosexuality. He's married. 61-year-old Reekers was caught by the Miami New Times last month in the company of a 20-year-old male escort at Miami International Airport.
Mm.
The couple was returning from a 10-day trip to London and Madrid. New Times, which published its expose in early May, got an explanation from Reekers. He said, I had surgery and I can't lift luggage. That's why I hired him.
Really? But where did he hire him?
And plus, he gives... Never mind. alas, a photo showed Rikers rather than his companion handling the baggage cart. The paper also reported that Rikers had recruited the young man from
rentboy.com. Hot stuff.
A website whose graphic sexual content requires visitors to vouch for their age. And Frank Rich says, Rentboy, really? Who could make this stuff up? Much like the former Senator Craig, who says, I'm not gay, Rikers claims it was all an innocent mix-up. His only mistake, he told the magazine Christianity Today, was to hire a travel assistant without proper vetting, which means checking him out. The travels were not in vain, though, that Frank Rich reports. The good minister expressed gratitude that his rent boy, quote, did let me share the gospel of Jesus Christ
with
many scriptures in three extended conversations.
No. This is how it went. It was like this. Ready?
You're going to say down on your knees?
No.
No.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
There you go.
Oh, we all know it.
But it's all fun. I mean, because we love to laugh at scandal when people are such incredible hypocrites. But Frank Rich reports that Rikers is no bit player in the culture wars. And this is, you know, that these right-wing conservatives have declared culture wars against the rest of us. Though he's not a household name, he should be. Is Frank Rich. He's the Zelig of homophobia, having played a significant role in many of the ugliest assaults on gay people and their civil rights over the last three decades. His public career goes back to his authorship. He titled something, Growing Up Straight, What Families Should Know About Homosexuality.
Well, he would know. Yeah. You know, he's an expert.
Now, Rikers went on to become a co-founder with James Dobson of the Family Research Council, a major, if not the major, activist organization of the religious right, as well as a power broker in the Republican Party. When the Miami scandal broke, the council's current president, Tony Perkins,
quickly tried to distance himself.
Tony Perkins. That's wrong. Why can't I ever...
People would think something was wrong with you if you got it right on the first try, Peter. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so Rikers basically wrote this, and he went on, and this James Dobson is a real mess.
Wait, you're calling him, what are you calling him? I'm calling him Rikers.
It's Rikers.
Rikers, all right, yeah. But anyway, let me just go back to this. And we said, let's see, the council's current president, Tony Perkins...
Oh, Anthony. Okay. Now I know why you brought that out.
Okay.
You got it right.
Yeah, I got it.
Nice.
So
he tried to distance himself.
Yeah, he tried to distance himself, and Tony Perkins says, I don't know. We have no contact with him. We don't know who he is. The historical record is hardly as obscure as Perkins maintained. Rachel Maddow of MSNBC found that only weeks before Riker's excellent European adventure, his name appeared on the masthead of an official-looking letter sent to 14,000 school superintendents nationwide, informing them that homosexuality is a choice that can be stamped out by therapy.
My gosh.
Yeah.
This guy.
So, I mean, talk about self-hatred and all of that.
Yeah, we always come back to this too, Peter. It's really kind of sad.
Yeah.
How repressed this guy is.
But no less destructive has been Riker's role in maintaining the Florida law prohibiting adoptions by gay couples and individuals. When the law was challenged, and you might say, I don't think it should happen, but get this.
Yeah,
get
but he's gay and can have kids, so
yeah,
come on.
Right, yeah. When the law was challenged in court 2 years ago, the state attorney general, Bill McCollum, personally intervened to enlist Rikers as an expert witness to uphold it. Rikers charged $120,000 for his services, a taxpayer expenditure now becoming an issue in the Florida gubernatorial race, where McCollum is a Republican candidate to succeed Charlie Crist as governor.
I'm sure.
So you get this repressed gay who is hanging out with rent boys.
Yeah.
Is
that wasn't cheap.
Tens of thousands of dollars to give expert testimony on how gay activity can be psychologically repressed through therapy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, man.
It doesn't get much better than this.
He was also an expert witness in a similar case in Arkansas. His bill there was $200,000, but he settled for $60,000. He was an expert witness by the Boy Scout to uphold its gay ban. But, here's what it all is. And it comes down to
karma.
Frank Rich. Yeah. Yeah. It's going, paybacks are going to be MFs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you. Thanks to Riker's clownish public exposure, we now know that his professional judgments are windows into his cracked psyche, not gay people's.
Thank you.
And also on the hypocritical thing, here was, I never heard of this guy before, Ray Bolts.
He was this the singer?
Big-time Christian pop star.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, his wife of 30 years. He says, if I tell you some certain things I'm going through, he said, you won't love me anymore. She said, no matter what it was. So he became more depressed, and then it all came out. He's gay. He's been trying not to be gay since his teens, and he had inhabited and even thrived in a fundamentalist Christian culture that instructed him that he could pray to be delivered from his
affliction.
His
sin. Can you believe this?
By now in his early 50s, he stopped believing that godly intervention could change who and what he was. So good for him.
That's yes. It.
And he says, around Christmas 2004, in the midst of a family dinner, Mr. Bolts' son Phil asked, Daddy, what's wrong with you? Daddy said,
Daddy's gay.
I'm gay. Yeah. And his wife and his children, startled though they were by the revelation, told him they still loved and supported him. It's all.
It's very, very sweet, that part
so
of the story.
The guy was close to suicide, and by announcing who he was fundamentally.
Yeah.
Not, he chose the gay lifestyle, because he hadn't. As an openly gay man living in a gay-friendly part of Florida with his partner, Franco Sperduti. What?
I know, Peter.
He released his first album since COVID.
You did not.
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
Moving right along.
Yeah. And he's got songs about same-sex marriage. Don't tell me who to love. Bias. No, I don't want to say.
Yeah, I know. That don't. No, we'll never be able to finish.
Yeah, right. So good for him. So these and the, always good for a little news note. South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. Why doesn't he just go away? Remember the guy?
I kind of like him. I enjoy his story.
He went hiking on the Appalachian Trail.
He did, but he was really in Argentina with his soulmate.
Yeah.
She's my soulmate. She's my lover.
Banging Maria Belenchapur of Argentina.
Yes, and so they got together last weekend in Florida. He's trying to rekindle that affair that wrecked his marriage and his political future.
So now he's divorced, though, so it's okay. Jenny Sanford, his wife, who now has been a popular talk show guest and whose political capital is rising, on Thursday she'll be last Thursday. She was on Dr. Phil recalling the affair. It's got a book out. And on Friday, she'll be campaigning for State Representative Nikki Haley in the Republican primary to replace her ex-husband and become the state's first woman chief executive.
Nothing like a revenge of a woman, of a woman.
But she hasn't learned what fakes these Republicans are. And
yeah, right. That's so true.
And she, now here's a name that that is like moving quickly into the, I can't even think of her name.
Kagan?
No. This is way back in the Clinton administration. What was the woman the cigar lady?
Oh, Monica Lewinsky.
Monica Lewinsky, yeah. How soon we forget. That was like 10 years ago or something like that. So, I mean, Palin, the silver medalist in the vice presidential race.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And the half-term governor of Alaska, she's fading. All those baggers and all that can all bag. Because one of the things, people are getting hit, they are such a bunch of hypocrites.
It scares me how long it takes people to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know what? I think there's more more people that have figured it out. It's just the way the news is skewed.
So, true. Very
so,
true.
So all these baggers get a free ride. But, I mean, once they cross a line,
they can't go back.
Yeah. They
can't come back.
Yeah, so to speak. Right. All right. Let's see. Here is Ed. Ed is in Bloomfield. Hi, Ed. You're on the air. Hey, Ed. Ed.
Oh, you need
oh,
to.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
You got to put them on the air. 313-298-WRIF. Now, Ed, you're on the air. Welcome. Ed, let me see. Did I do everything right?
Where is Ed?
I hear Ed.
There he is.
Ed.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Hey, my question for you, Peter, is to me, the biggest minority in the politics, how I should put it, is the third parties. And what is it that the third parties have got to do or start doing to get in the House of Representatives and the Senate? Is it getting in line with the special interest groups?
Sure,
or
the only way.
More money, or
it's all about money, unfortunately. That as long as you got money dominating politics the way it does, and the Supreme Court, with all the Bush appointees on there, just said now they can contribute unrestricted amounts of money because, hey, corporations are people, just like you and me, Ed, and we might give $25 to a major party or a third party, and they can now give $25 million. So unless we alter the system, as Bob Dylan sang one time, money doesn't talk, it swears. Right?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much more out there to choose from, whether you like the Natural Law Party, the Libertarian Party, than just Democrats or Republicans. And I just wish more people.
How about the Greens? Don't forget the Greens.
Oh, yes, and the Green Party.
Yeah.
But hopefully the third party start, getting some voices out there in Washington. I mean, that's how I've been voting, and hope more people look to other things than just to Democrats or Republicans.
Well, I'll tell you, what happens, of course, is, there's so much of this within our system is based on blackmail. So if you're like towards the right, they'll say if you vote for a conservative party like the Constitutional Party or something like that, you're letting the Democrats get in. And if you're to the left and you can say, well, I'm going to vote for the Greens or Natural Law Party, then they'll say, you're going to make sure that the Republicans get in. Actually, the Green Party candidate for president in the last election in 2008 said if you're in a Democratic state, like here in Michigan, you could easily vote for third parties because it was all wrapped up. You knew Obama was going to get it. McCain and that lady, had abandoned Michigan. They decided not to campaign here because they knew they were going to lose, which, they did. So you could have voted for third parties either way there. But in states that were what they call battleground states like Ohio or Pennsylvania, people said, you got to vote for one of the mainstream candidates. But, one of the things that third parties always say is better to vote for something you want than and not get it than vote for something you don't want and get it, right?
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Ed. I think in the short run, what it's really going to take is like in other countries that don't depend as much on corporate money as in other places, but when they have, for instance, parties on the left, they're always financed by labor unions. So like the Labor Party in Britain or the NDP, the New Democratic Party in Canada, they're financed directly by labor unions, where the feeling is that these are the parties that are going to put forth legislation that are going to directly benefit the
workers,
not only union workers but all workers. So here in the United States, the unions take our money and they go, well, look at the Democrats are better than a stick in the eye, and the Republicans are a stick in the eye for working people. So we wind up with something that's not quite as bad as the Republicans, but the real issues of labor never get faced. But as long as the money's there, Ed, it'll just be a little teeny protest vote. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. I am not going to vote for Sander Levin. I'm going to vote for the Greens in this coming election. A guy I know, did you ever meet when we worked for the UAW, when we broadcast for them our national show, Bob King? You remember Bob King?
I sure do.
Well, he's now the president of the UAW.
Right.
Yeah, and he says, as better times return, the United Auto Workers says, hey, we want some little bit of money back. All told, hourly workers gave up pay and benefits worth $7,000 to $30,000 each a year during the downturn. And Bob King, who's a lot more militant, certainly, than the people that have been there before him, says we got to talk about, as Ford Motor, who's making a profit, restores perks for salaried workers, putting that Bob King is putting the companies on notice that he expects hourly workers to be given back some of the benefits. I'm all about that.
He was was always a fan of our show, Bob King.
He was, yeah.
I think if he had stayed there and been president instead of the last one,
we'd still be
on the air. Syndicated nationally.
Doing a talk show every day. I don't know. You know, we know a lot of people that do that.
Yeah, 3 hours a day.
Rachel Maddow. Oh, that's what, yeah, that guy in the UAW said, well, you only work 3 hours a day.
Is that really how you think that we gather all this information? We just pop on the air.
That was the closest I ever came to violence in the last 20 or 30 years. I almost left across the desk.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. That CC. That guy.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Different one?
Yeah. Guy always used to put his feet up on the desk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in Arab cultures, the first thing you do is show your soles of your feet. Remember the guy that threw the shoes at Bush?
How could I not? I'm a fan of his on Facebook.
Are you?
Yeah.
Tell me about
that. There's a whole group. You could become a fan of the guy who threw his shoe at George W. Bush.
Did you ever write him?
No. He probably doesn't even know he's on there. But it's a bunch of people.
Oh.
You know who put.
How many fans does he have?
I don't know.
Hey, you can be a fan of Night Call.
You can. We do have a page, and you can listen to the podcast
and you just go to just facebook.com/Night Call.
Yeah.
Yeah. N-I-G-H-T.
And thank you, Debbie.
Yeah,
as
thank you,
always,
Debbie.
Out in Northampton for taking care of
who
that.
Who handles all of that for us? There'll be a podcast available at noon on Mondays. Thanks to Jade, who's answering your phones, who now is broadcasting on WRIF before
she's
our show.
On the air before us.
Yeah,
right.
Great. Nick, who was previously, is off to Portland, Oregon.
He is. He's traveling. I've been watching him on Facebook.
Sure.
He was at the Corn Palace, and he had some buffalo. He's on his way. He's out of here.
You mean he was eating buffalo?
No, he saw they were in a field.
Oh, he saw a buffalo.
Yes. Yeah. So, Nick, if you're listening, we miss you, but we're glad we have Jade.
Indeed. All right. 313-298-WRIF. There are open lines. Here is Maurice in Detroit. Maurice, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Julian, how you doing? We missed you last week, Julian.
Maurice, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Yes. I'd like to make a comment on the lady that got shot.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And her son.
No, regardless of the guy that was doing the shooting, if his bullet killed or did, he caused that to happen, and he should be tried for something. You know, if you're going to try to stop a vehicle, try to shoot low and shoot the tires out. You know, that's a bigger target than trying to shoot a person in a vehicle that's moving.
Wait a minute.
That's just common sense.
Oh, she was in a car.
No. Common sense. You agree or disagree with me, Peter?
You're saying...
He's saying just shoot the tires instead of the people.
Yeah, because, I mean, what's
I thought she was in a trailer.
What I'm saying is, what's easier to hit a person inside the car or hit the vehicle itself?
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute here. By the way, Maurice, you must have got a new phone because it's
sounding clear, crystal clear, Maurice.
We understand you for once. Carrie Sales was making life work, dancing at a strip club and taking in a boarder. Thank you for the original account had border spelled like, you know, the Canadian border, but had a boarder in her Clinton Township home to support her and her two children. But police say the man who claimed to love her shot and killed Sales 34 and her four-year-old son, Skyler, on Saturday night. Police say he also wounded her six-year-old daughter, Heaven, and their boarder, spelled wrong, James Pagnio, who the children called Uncle Jimmy. Let's see. Where did he... You're saying...
He was in... That they were in a moving car.
Yeah.
She may have been trying to get away from
him. Oh, neighbors... no. Seals, children riding back and forth in front of their house. Let me see here. I don't see... let's go back to Maurice here. Where do you see they were in a car?
No, this lady, okay, this guy was working on a bandit house. This dude stole his SUV. He went running down the street, and he shot the grandmother she was sitting in the house.
Different story.
You're talking about a different story.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the little seven-year-old girl that got shot by the police officer yesterday.
No, this was a guy, a 65-year-old guy. That guy had the story somewhere.
We can't even keep track. There's so many.
Yeah, they're just mowing them
gun
down,
violence,
man. Mowing them down.
Okay, it's right here. This was in, what paper was this in? This was in, I don't even see the day on the paper. It was last week. Stray bullet stops a generous heart.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I did see that. Like a grandmother got shot.
Yeah.
All right, Maurice, we're gonna hang it up. But congratulations on your new phone. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Christopher in Port Huron. Christopher, go ahead.
I'd like to talk about the 7-year-old girl that got shot.
Yeah.
It should be the cops' fault for doing it because they should have seen it. Toys like they even said on the news. It's completely stupid.
I missed this one. I didn't know.
They were looking for to serve an arrest warrant for murder. And let's see here. The story is squatting on the stoop outside his Detroit home. The father of the 7-year-old girl killed earlier that day gazed at photos of his only daughter. The scene Sunday outside Iana Jones's home on Lily Bridge was a mixture of shock and grief. I can't get to the details, but you know, the shooting, which happened during a raid to catch a murder suspect who was found and arrested at the home today, is the latest high-profile death in a city where there's a growing sense that violence is spilling out of control. Ron Scott, head of the Detroit Coalition Against Police Brutality, called Sunday's shooting the worst he's seen in 14 years of working to stop police abuse. Well, it was an accident. I mean, he didn't try to shoot her. Things go wrong and things happen that you didn't necessarily plan for, says Detroit Police Sergeant David Mahala. And let's see, it's a chain of events triggered at 3 p.m. On Friday when this 17-year-old got gunned down, and then they were looking for the suspect, who was a 34-year-old man. They got a search warrant for a home on Lily Bridge on Detroit's east side. And because of the ruthless and violent nature of the suspect in this case, it was determined that it would be in the best interest of public safety to execute the search warrant as soon as possible. The police said they threw an incendiary device known as a flashbang through a front window of the home to create a distraction. After entering, Detroit police officer got into a tussle with Myrtilla Jones, Ariana's grandmother, who was in the front room. The police gun went off and Ariana was killed. What is going on here? I mean, here's a guy that's...
They
got the guy. Mm. Yeah, yeah. I heard, boom, Detroit police, pop. It happened so fast, said Crystal Sanders, an aunt of the girl who lives at the house, said outside the home. So, I don't know. Tragedy upon tragedy upon tragedy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do you sort that out? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. What,
Christopher?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks for calling.
Let's see. Here's Stu in Sterling Heights. Stu, hi. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Welcome. I just wanted to comment on what Maurice was talking about. He was talking about the homeowner that was checking on his property and got carjacked.
Uh-huh.
And he had a CCW, and he's chasing the vehicle down the street on foot, shooting at it. And he hit grandma a block away and killed her in her kitchen.
Oh my gosh.
She killed by a stray bullet, right.
By a stray bullet, by somebody that has a license with a CCW, and, you know, you shouldn't be popping off rounds running down the street.
Yeah, do you think?
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, because...
I just wanted to comment on Maurice's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good information, and I mean, I can't imagine anything more frightening and humiliating and angering than have somebody, like, carjack you. But there is something worse. I mean, after all, it is just a thing. You got insurance and all that. And the idea is that, you know, nobody's going to do that to me, and but, man. Just going down, shooting like it's the Old West. All right, Stu, thanks for that information. Appreciate it. Let's continue on here. Maybe more of the same. Patrick and Warren. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hey. How you doing, Peter?
We're good.
Good. Yeah, I was calling a comment on Maurice as well about the CCW holder that was shooting at the SUV that was taken from him.
Uh-huh.
You're not supposed to discharge your weapon unless your life is endangered, and that was a property crime. And that's a no-no if you're a CCW holder. You don't discharge your weapon to protect your property unless you're in your house and your house is being invaded.
So what, was this guy, the shooter, arrested?
I haven't followed up on the story because there's a shooting every day lately.
Yeah.
It's a sad situation. I was 2 miles away from the fatality at Aiton Hoover, or Aiton Shaner, Shaner, Aiton Shaner the other day, 2 weeks ago. And you know, that's a sad day in history there for the city of Detroit. It's never happened before like that in one day in one spot.
Wow.
You know, my dad worked for that city for 34 years and retired as a sergeant. Never had to discharge his gun in the line of duty other than to put a dog down that he hit on a rainy night. He had guns drawn on him. He had to draw his gun. He's never had to discharge it in 34 years.
No, I think times have changed.
Times have changed.
The overwhelming majority of police officers never discharge their gun.
That's correct.
Yeah, right. All right. Times are changing, and the economy.
But the thing is, the people with the CCW permits, they need to realize that you can't run out in your street. If somebody's stealing your car in your driveway, that you can't go out there and shoot at them.
Yeah, right. it'd be nice if they knew the rules. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Well, there are rules. There's three main rules that you can discharge your weapon as a CCW holder. Number one is home invasion. And you're in fear of your life, and that person's coming to your home, and you actually are really told to back into a room, a safe room, in your own home before you fire, and warn them verbally. Two is carjacking when you're in your car.
Right, not chasing it.
Not chasing it after it's been taken from you, and you're fine. Your threat is gone. You know, you're safe. Third one is criminal sexual misconduct or rape. And that's three.
Eesh.
That's it. There's no other reason.
You know, but it should be easy for these folks to know. There's three rules.
Well,
that's my point.
Aren't I mean, they're not like giving them out. They're not giving out CCW permits, but the people that have them need to realize.
What do you mean? They are giving them out. Anybody can get them. As long
I could
as you
go get
have
one tomorrow.
Criminal background or mental illness.
Yes, it's scary, you know, to a point, because, I mean, there should, I wouldn't want to say an age restriction limit, but, you know, I think that gentleman that did shoot that grandmother with a stray bullet was, I believe, in his 60s, and I'm not saying anything about older people having guns, but he may not have understood the rules totally. Who knows?
Clearly.
Really.
Or he didn't care at the moment,
yeah.
Right?
Well, he might have been very angry, but then again, too, if you're raised in an environment where gunshots are going off by people that don't even have permits and have illegal weapons with files or the serial numbers filed off. And here you are, you save your money, you go buy a handgun, you pay close to $1,000 for a nice handgun.
Jeez.
Go to the class, get a permit, and you're carrying it. The only time you discharge your weapon, if you have to, is those three incidences.
Yeah, well, I think certainly when the permit is issued, they get those rules. All right, Patrick, thank you very much. Thanks for all the info, and we will be right back. There's open lines, 313-298-WRIF, or I think Mr. Announcer gives it as well.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else.
This week's featured deal is New Rogel Golf Course in Detroit.
All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
It all starts with having a good pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend for why spring is the best time to replace your gutters. Got a soggy backyard from all the rain? It's not too late for repair. We'll give you some Solutions, and we'll help you get your house in peak warm weather condition. Pat Kelly of Kelly Brothers Heating, Cooling, and Standby Generators sits down with us on the Contractor's Corner. Hire It Done Spotlight on the latest home improvement products, our money-saving tip of the week. We'll head back to school at Hire It Done University, and we're going to teach you how to avoid getting scammed. Plus, I'm going to take your house calls live. All this Saturday, beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF, The Rift.
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, the online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring new Rogel Golf Course in Detroit.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Detroit's Rock Station 101. The Real Riff.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
I'd like a nice skim, no whip latte.
Hey, you're the Red Defender, right?
Yes.
I saw you in the paper. You saved a runaway train.
That's right.
So shouldn't you be out saving something?
I already stopped a bank heist this morning.
Evil doesn't take a break.
Can I sit down for a second?
Hey, dial back the caffeine, man.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. One pint of blood can save up to three lives. Go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
We're back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final segment. Remember, 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Antonia Yuhas from Global Exchange's Chevron program talking about the BP oil spill. A lot more to it, a lot deeper, if you will, than what we're getting in the news. And Ken writes in to calltalkyes at yahoo.com. Peter, I'm really surprised when you said you'll vote for the Green Party candidate. I don't mean to tell you how to vote, but I'm sure you know a vote for the Green Party takes away from the Democratic candidate, consequently helping the Republican candidate. Well, this is exactly what I said. This is the blackmail. So no matter how bad Sander Levin, who is Carl Levin's younger brother, Sandy, no matter how many things that he votes for that I disagree with, I've got to vote for him, or we're going to get the dreaded Republican in. Well, I don't know what I wanted. I was trying to encourage a number of people from peace groups to run somebody against him in the primary, but never got it together. All right, I wanted to, actually, this sometimes is one of these things where people go crazy about all of this. But let me just run this by you. You remember that there was Arizona that put together this bill that would...
The immigration
law that said that the cops have to stop people that that look like they could be illegal immigrants.
Well, kind of. That's... Yeah. We believe.
No, that's what it virtually says. Oh, give the appearance of, yeah.
If there's a traffic infraction.
Right. Now, Governor Jan Brewer, the Republican governor of Arizona, has again upset the state's large Hispanic population, signing a bill aimed at ending ethnic studies in Tucson schools. Under the law signed on Tuesday, any school district that offers classes designed primarily for students of particular ethnic groups, advocate ethnic solidarity, or promote resentment of a race or class of people would risk losing 10% of its state financing. Judy Burns, president of the governing board of the Tucson schools, said the district's ethnic studies courses did not violate any of the provisions of the new law and would be continued because they were valuable to the students. She said, "Everything I've ever seen, they empower kids to take charge of their own destiny, gain a sense of the value of their own existence, and become determined to be well-educated, contributing members of society." The Republican who introduced this said, "The most offensive thing to me is fundamentally it's dividing kids by race. They're teaching a radical ideology in Raza, R-A-Z-A, which means race, including that Arizona and other states were stolen from Mexico and should be given back. The students in Tucson, where about 56% of the students are Hispanic, offer Mexican-American studies classes in history and literature and African-American literature classes. Now, here's what's important to me. Although the classes are open to all students, most of those who enroll are members of the ethnic or racial group being discussed." Mr. Horn said, "The evidence is overwhelming that ethnic studies in the Tucson Unified School District teaches a kind of destructive ethnic chauvinism in that the citizens of Tucson should no longer tolerate." Pardon me. In that letter, he said he believed that students were learning hostility from La Raza teachers, citing an incident in which students at the Tucson High School walked out on a speech by his deputy, a Republican Latina, who was trying to refute an earlier speaker who had told the student body that Republicans hate Latinos.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, they don't. They love Latinos.
Right.
But so I was always thinking that I think what's happened, of course, when these ethnic study things began, is that the history of, for instance, black people in America was never told, and that of Hispanic people was never told, and that it was important that people learn about this. Partly, if you're a discriminated against ethnic group, it's good to know because that gives you, hey, it's not just all rich old white men.
Right.
Or what is it? White. What do we call them? White. White old rich men. Worms.
Oh.
Yeah.
Worms.
That made all the history. That Howard Zinn wrote in The People's History of the United States, that it was lots of people. Besides these guys, there were also people of color and women and ethnic groups and what have you that formed this country, created its history. Pardon me. And I know people in the Detroit area that teach ethnic studies, both Hispanic and African American. Without treading on any toes, actually, couldn't care less whether I tread on any toes, to tell you the truth. But I sometimes worry that they do have you don't want to go from white dominance in people's consciousness to, an alternate ethnic consciousness of superiority. And I don't think that these groups are teaching that. But what's really necessary is for everybody to know all the history. So the fact, for instance, that if I was a high school student, I'd love to take Hispanic American history. I'd love to take African American courses. Those are exciting stories of our history. One of the arguments is against specific ethnic histories is they do wall people off. And I don't have a lot of experience with this. I've never really seen much information mm-hmm. on how these come down in practical terms. But obviously, all of this should be integrated into American history. Like that. So, I mean, you can say, and some of the, you know, these races say, well, how come we don't have white studies? Well, up till now, that's what history has been.
My gosh.
The history of white people. White people came here and civilized the continent after...
Civilized.
It wasn't civilized before.
Uh-huh.
So these Europeans came who had totally screwed up Europe on every imaginable
So here they come.
Yeah, you know, politically, religiously, environmentally, everything. It kind of destroyed the whole continent. And they then, man, and plus they were broke, you know, the Europeans, our blood of our forebears. And so they had to find somewhere else they could loot and destroy, and took this toxic culture, imported it from Europe. And, yeah, we've been having a go at it, trying to improve it a little. I mean, I hope we have enough time in order to do that. We're sort of running out of the time. So I don't know about these ethnic studies. I don't, how many of you have any experience with this, either positive or negative? But we should have history. We should have American history. All of this should be included. Should there be specific ethnic studies? I mean, it doesn't cause me any pain, that's for sure. I'm not in high school, I'm not in college, but and the people that I know are that are involved in ethnic studies, the Hispanic studies and African-American studies, they're just the pillars of their specific communities and the general community. So yeah. I have nothing but positive sense of all that. I don't know. But you know, a lot of times as soon as you start saying that, people go,
There's some grumbling.
Yeah. Let's see. Here's Scott in Westland. Scott, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Jalene.
Hi.
Well, I guess I want to raise a red flag about new natural gas leases in Michigan. And unfortunately, there may be an echo here to the disaster in the Gulf. Now, this is a little technical, but the problem with a lot of recent new natural gas drilling is something called hydraulic fracturing or hydrofracking or simply fracking. And actually, this might also answer the question of somebody asked of what happens, you know, to the void that you create when you pump out a lot of natural gas. Now, actually, this is my theory. I'm not absolutely sure this is true, but I think in Michigan, where we've had natural gas drilling for like 20 years or so, it probably fills with water because, you know, we've got the Great Lakes and the Great Lakes aquifers and stuff like that. However, what's been happening in some other parts of the country, they've been doing something called hydrofracking, where the gas is trapped in a relatively porous rock formation where they have to break up these small pockets of gas to release them so they can pump them out. Now, traditionally, and this goes back like 50 years, water or hot water is all they use to do this. And
right.
Even then, it could cause problems where the gas comes up on somebody else's property, et cetera. But okay, lately, and this is mostly a product of the regulatory regime that was instituted during the Cheney administration. Notice I didn't say Bush. And so what has happened is that they're now using, you'd wish it was water, okay? They're using toxic chemicals like toluene and sulfuric acid, which actually are much more efficient solvents than water, actually. The problem is, as you might imagine, this pollutes the groundwater, and it might.
Sure.
And so, and again, there's a very good movie about this. There's several good documentaries. The one I can remember the name of is Split Estate, which I think I saw on HBO or something like that. But basically what happens is that people who've had cattle ranches in Colorado for generations, you know, and rely on their well water to, you know, feed their livestock or even to farm.
Right, wind up with polluted groundwater. Well, what's happening as those sources of energy begin to be more and more elusive, you got to start thinking about drilling deeper and deeper. You have to start using more and more toxic methods of extracting all this stuff. And the whole announcement to anyone sensible, like you're suggesting, Scott, is that we got to find another source of energy. Gee, where can we do it? Let me see. I'm just sitting here in the sun wondering where it is. Yeah, you know, like solar power or something like that. But you're absolutely right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF. Hey, we got some open lines for you if you'd like to comment. Here's Richard in Westland. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
I want to comment on the killing of Geraldine Jackson, the grandmother who was hit by the stray bullet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, the guy who did the shooting,
mm-hmm.
He, according to Sunday's Free Press, he has yet to be charged with any crime. But the carjacker, he has been charged with her murder, which I find a little bit strange, to say the least.
Really?
Yes. They're charging the carjacker with her murder instead of the actual shooter.
Well, if you commit, an act, if you're involved in a felony in which causes the death, even if you didn't pull a trigger, that within, with, I don't know, in this case, it's kind of weird. Or maybe not, I don't know. But, you know, well, you know what? Since the guy, the shooter, committed an act that was opposed to the regulations of his weapons permit, I don't think that's going to stick. But in, you know, in a lot of, if a guy is, for instance, sitting in a getaway car and a bank guard is killed, the driver of the getaway car, who was promised by the other banker or the other bank robbers that that no violence would be used, that the getaway guy gets charged with murder as well.
Right, right. But that's because he's in on that crime. Well, I think he should be charged. The carjacker should be charged as well. But the shooter who acted irresponsibly to start discharging his firearm, you know, as he's running down the street, there's no reason why he shouldn't be behind bars as well. And I also wanted to talk about you were talking about third parties a little bit earlier.
Sure.
And I support the Green Party,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of the reason why they don't get much, not much voter support at the polls is because the mainstream media really ignores them and doesn't cover any of the things that they do, any of their candidates. Like, I read the paper quite often. I've seen so many stories about all the Republican and Democratic nominees for the primary for Michigan governor, but I haven't seen two words about any Green Party or any other party's candidates.
Well, you're absolutely right, and they don't consider them major contenders. They're just sort of kind of side notes. Once in a while, they'll get a little play, but the major contenders are who they are. But I'll tell you what, Richard, I've actually talked to a lawyer about suing the state of Michigan, me being the plaintiff, or bringing a class action suit, which would be on behalf of myself and others similarly situated, such as yourself, who are neither Democrats or Republicans, and asking, why is the state of Michigan financing the selection of candidates for private parties? In other words, there's all these candidates running to be the gubernatorial candidate on the Republican and the Democratic ticket. But if you and I are supporting the Greens, why is our tax dollars going to choose a Republican candidate? Right?
Yeah.
So,
right, right.
I don't know. Should I go ahead with it?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right, Richard. Thank you so much. Let me get some more of these final calls here. Dan in St. Clair Shores. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Welcome. Hey, Dan.
Hey, again. You there?
Yeah, we're here.
I want to ask you one question here now. Where did you grow up at?
Detroit.
Where at Detroit?
Around Davison and Liverpool.
Now, how old are you?
None of your business. You don't ask a woman, and you don't ask anybody on the air.
Well, no, I'll ask you a question. You going to hang up on me?
I might.
Wait, what? You seem very hostile.
What's the problem?
I'm not being hostile. You're reacting to this guy that shot this carjacker. How many violent confrontations have you been in your life?
A few. Why? What are you asking?
Okay.
What?
Well,
come on. You know, we're running out of time.
Fight?
What?
Fright or flight is what it is.
Yeah. So, listen, I don't know what you're talking about.
He's saying that he had the fright. He had the fright or the flight syndrome. The guy who did the shooting with the CCW, and he reacted to a situation. That's
Dan, you haven't a clue what went on there, and neither do I. So now, yes, I will hang up on you. Here's Alex in Wyandotte. Go ahead, you're on the air. Hey, Alex.
Hello?
Yeah, Alex, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. I just need some advice on something because I'm like 15.
Yeah.
And I'm the only Democrat in a house full of
Republicans.
Oh, you know what? You and I are in the same situation. I'm not 15, but I have the same thing going on.
Yeah, and like it's hard too because I'm also an atheist in a house full of devout Catholics.
Oh my gosh! Just hold on to your seat till you're 18.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, the younger you are, the harder it is to manage rebellious beliefs, or you know, not that there's not tens of millions of atheists, and not that there's not 50 million or more Democrats, But you know, when you're there, I mean, I don't know. I mean, my legs and my...
Well, how do they treat you?
What do you mean?
Basically like the outcast.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
What's that song by Cheap Trick, Surrender? You ever hear that? It's kind of an old band.
I think so.
They say surrender, surrender, but never give yourself away. I mean, that's good advice when you're young. But it's true. The younger you are, the less standing you have, and the more difficult it is. Listen, my mother and father are extraordinarily liberal. My whole family is, and yeah. I mean, my father was head of peace groups and stuff like that. But he and I still used to argue. You know?
Really?
Yeah, I was a little more red than he was.
So surprising.
Yeah. So the thing is, of course...
Try to keep the peace as much as you can.
Well, I was going to say two things. One, get informed as much as you can. But usually it's increasingly difficult to have conversations between, let's not say Democrats and Republicans, but between conservatives and liberals or conservatives and people on the left. I mean, I find that... I don't even find any room, any common basis for a discussion.
Right, except for a talk show. But,
yeah.
I would say just try to, you know, learn as, like Peter said, learn as much as you can. And, try to not create too much...
hassle in the family. Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, if one of family members said, you know, that Obama's a socialist.
Just ignore him as much as you can.
You can either say, there's nothing about him that even is anything like a socialist.
Or do you even know what a socialist is?
Yeah, or you can say,
that's what I'd say.
Or you can say, you can roll your eyes and say, whatever.
Yeah, I know. And then go, do you have a punching bag or something? Find an outlet.
What you really need, Alex, is to find co-thinkers.
Yeah, like people who are like, do you have friends who think like you?
Yeah.
Good. Well, that's good. Really good. And we're always here for you, too.
All right, Alex, I got to go, but thank you. Good luck on it. Give us maybe some updates on it all. Let's see. Here is Eric in Waterford. Eric, hi. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. You got to tell me quick. I'm almost out of time.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that... I don't support either Democrats or Republicans because both support more government involvement in everyday life. So
like
I'm
what?
Libertarian.
Like,
and I would also
wait. Well, how far? What don't you think? Do you think big corporations should be controlled?
No.
No. You think they ought to just be able to do whatever
they
want?
Run the world.
Do you think there should be any minimum wage law?
No.
Do you think there should be any Social Security?
Yes.
Wait a minute now. Why Social Security?
That's pretty big government there.
Yeah. Do you think there should be Medicare?
I'm saying less government. I'm not saying no government.
Yeah. Well, but certain things. All right. We got to let it go at that because I'm out of time. But thank you very much for being our last caller. All right. Jalene Jordan, thank you so much. Jade, thank you as usual for doing it all in the other room. And more on the oil spill, Antonia Yuhas from Global Exchange will be my guest when we return.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Woohoo!
Win big at the casino?
Nope, better than that. I just got a great deal at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Ah, yes, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, the online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses.
I always look there first. They're the best bet for online coupons and discounts.
This week, MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com is featuring new Rogel Golf Course in Detroit.
Jackpot! Nobody beats MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Deal yourself a winning hand. Save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your own home when you connect to amazing deals like these and more at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? Having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Hi, this is Mark Schmeiss from Creed.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
The Riff. Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad.
This is Chris.
This is Brian from Cabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Everything that rocks.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. The Gulf oil spill crisis just continues unabated. What a horror show. And we've seen a few of these in the past. And there was just a congressional report released today, Wednesday, as I record this. And the Henry Waxman Committee says that a key safety device known as a blowout preventer used in the BP oil rig in the Gulf had a hydraulic leak and other problems that prevented it from working as designed. According to Representative Bart Stupak of Michigan, he said that a 2001 report by Transocean, which made the device, indicated there could be as many as 260 failure possibilities in the equipment. The device is supposed to be the final safeguard against a well blowout by clamping down and sealing a gushing oil well. Well, you know the rude phrase, which I can't say on the air, stuff happens, doesn't it? You know, you got to want oil for our cars and whatever. We're going to face it every once in a while. A little bit of a problem, although this is a lot more than a little bit. But is it that simple? When I want to know about oil, I go to Antonia Yuhas. She's the author of The Tyranny of Oil, the world's most powerful industry and what we must do to stop it. It was a 2008 book from HarperCollins, still very relevant, and I interviewed her at the time of the release of the book. She's currently the director of the Chevron program at Global Exchange, which is a San Francisco-based human rights organization. We reach Antonia Yuhas at her office in San Francisco. Welcome back to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks so much for having me. Good afternoon.
So Henry Waxman says, so oh, those darn little widgets and gadgets and what have you. Then, boy, just got to kind of get the technology working a little better, and we wouldn't be faced with that, hey?
Well, you know, it's a host of issues. It is widgets and gadgets. This is an incredibly, incredibly technologically complex operation that we're talking about. And you sort of should put this all in context. For most of the offshore drilling history in the Gulf, offshore rigs were drilling at depths of about 30 to 140 feet. And actually, the majority of platforms still operate at that depth. But in the last 10 years...
Let me interrupt you. We're talking about not with any zeros on it, just 30 to 40 feet, period.
Exactly.
Okay.
No extra zeros. So
yes,
that's still where the majority of the platforms are located.
That means people could actually dive to that distance.
Actually, yeah. Given coastal erosion, a lot of it caused by offshore drilling, you could walk out to those platforms.
Okay.
Because there's no more coast out there. But anyway, but in the last, first in the last 10 years, but more, really more aggressively in just the last handful of years, oil companies have been pushing and pushing further out into deeper and deeper waters. So a deep well is 1,000 feet deep from the top of the ocean. An ultra-deep well is 5,000 feet deep. BP was drilling at 18,000 feet when this well blew, and actually BP, just in the last 2 years, drilled the deepest well anywhere at 25,000 feet, which is as far down as Mount Everest is up.
35,000.
Excuse me, 35,000.
Yeah, I'm reading now Antonia Yuhas' article in the London Guardian.
Good to get myself quoted.
Yeah, that's
correctly.
Right. Yeah, 35,000 feet, so that's an enormous distance. How do they even know there's oil down there?
Well, they know there's oil down there through seismic testing that actually, the type of testing they do among the problems associated with it is that it is known to burst the eardrums and even the bladders of marine wildlife. This is basically the same sonar technology that's been blamed for whale beachings all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is a similar, the most common method is the similar method to sonar censoring that is deeply problematic just in the act of releasing the sensors, and then there's the all of the dangerous impacts of the drilling itself. So this is new. It's at depths that have never been tried before. It is, in the words of every oil expert, incredibly, incredibly complex. Essentially, what I hear it most likened to is deep space travel. There's that much uncertainty. There's that much distance almost, and just technological wizardry that's needed to make this work. Although we've been doing deep space travel for a significantly longer time than oil companies have been drilling at these depths. And what we know is that while they have been pushing the envelope to get into deeper and deeper waters, they've simultaneously been lobbying to reduce the regulatory oversight as they push out further. So one of the core issues that's been brought up is BP and the other oil companies lobbying in the last several years to stop a rule from being put in place that the government has been seeking for a while, which is to have essentially a redundancy, a blowout preventer that is required in Norway and at least one other country that could quite possibly have helped in this circumstance. We also know that BP lobbied to keep from having to do a full environmental assessment of the likely consequences of these operations, and that the combination of the lack of appropriate regulatory oversight or leniency and just severely pushing the boundaries of what's technologically possible, because we know that we absolutely do not have the methods for cleaning up this accident. And from my perspective, if we know that we can't clean it up if something goes wrong, that means we don't know how to do it. It means we don't have the technological capacity to do it.
Yeah, this is like nuclear waste.
It's exactly like nuclear waste. It is exactly the same type of situation as a nuclear fallout. We have mass amounts of toxins pouring into the ocean, pouring into the air. We can't stop the flow. We can't clean it up. And we basically just have to suffer the consequences.
Now, somewhere I was looking through all this material I had, and I thought it was in your article, which I would highly recommend to people. I think if you Google Antonio Yuhas's site, either tyrannyofoil.org, Tyranny of Oil is the name of her last book, tyrannyofoil.org, or globalexchange.org/Chevron. That ought to take you to it. Or try just the guardian.co.uk. There'll be I'm not going to give you another site right now, but it'll be at my website as well. Now, you mentioned that device, and I was looking through all this stuff. Somewhere along the line, is this the device that would have cost $500,000?
Yeah. It's not in my article, but covered in a lot of other articles. The Washington Post did an excellent expose on this. It's incredibly inexpensive, considering that basically this type of offshore drilling at minimum costs $1 million per day, just for leasing and operating the equipment. Then it costs about $120 million per hole, and they use diamond-encrusted drills to break through the Earth's surface, and this is just incredibly expensive endeavor, and an extra, $500,000 is nothing when you're looking at those numbers. The other thing is the reason why the industry has pushed so far past the envelope of where it makes sense to go is, one, obviously the oil is running out at the shallower depths. While the majority of operations take place in shallow depths, the majority of oil comes from these deep depths off the Gulf. And there's less oil in the shallow depths, but also, and there's less oil in general that is accessible to these companies. Governments own the majority of the oil that's left, and the oil companies are desperate to get their hands on what is out there. And they're pushing the envelope everywhere, including, I certainly argue, wars to acquire oil. But they also are wealthier than they've ever been. So the 8 years of the Bush administration were incredibly generous to the oil industry. Deregulation allowed, in my mind, the price of oil to double. That's the most significant contribution to the bottom lines of the oil companies. But also enormous subsidies, tax breaks, opening up areas to drilling such that in the United States we surpassed all records on the amount of production that we've had in recent history, such that we have a glut of oil in the United States. But essentially, beginning in about 2002, 2003, the oil companies started witnessing their highest profits in their histories. And in 2009, for the first time in history, 7 of the 10 largest corporations in the world were oil companies. And their wealth, their revenues, their profits are just utterly, utterly unmatched by any other industry.
Well, so for instance, why don't you tell us some about BP? Because we usually think ExxonMobil, bad. BP, they're green. how does that all play out?
Well, the first thing to say is, they have more money than anyone's ever had, and so they are all pushing the envelope, and they're more desperate than they've ever been to get oil. And that includes BP, which does market itself as a green company, which, in fact, all of them try to do now. Chevron, BP, Exxon, they all try to herald their investments in alternative energy. And they're just not. They just don't. So BP is, in fact, it has been the best of the oil companies in investing in green energy, and the best means that at its height, which it's since gone down from, BP spent at best 4% of its total capital and exploratory budget on a very broad category of what could remotely be considered green energy. And 4% is real money, but it hardly qualifies the company to describe itself as beyond petroleum when everything else it's doing is oil and natural gas. And in fact, BP, like the rest of the companies, is pushing ever further into dirtier modes of oil. So tar sands in Alberta, shale in the Midwest, offshore drilling, which is highly environmentally dangerous even when everything works well. They are oil companies, and they are deeply, deeply committed to remaining oil companies. And in that pursuit, they can be relentless, and BP is actually, unfortunately, quite well known in the United States for being a cost-cutting, dangerous company. So the last major workplace incident in the United States, before this one and before the coal deaths recently, was in 2005, a massive explosion at a BP refinery that killed 15 workers and injured 180.
Right. Yeah, I remember. Where was that, Louisiana or Texas?
That was Texas.
Yeah.
And the cause, according to the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, was relentless cost-cutting by BP that led to a erosion of safety, of training, of appropriate precautions, and the inevitable result was this deadly accident, according to the investigators. And BP was actually found criminally negligent for that cost-cutting across all its refineries in all locations, including its refinery in Michigan. And therefore, unfortunately, while it wasn't surprising, sadly, that there was an offshore oil incident, given the difficulty of these operations, it was also not surprising that it was BP at the helm.
You know, that's interesting, because I was just going to ask, if they're investing all this money, if they're realizing such enormous profits, why wouldn't they spend $500,000? I do see where I got this information from, which is called an emergency acoustic shutoff valve that would have cost $500,000 and could have prevented BP's disaster, according to Diane Wilson, who is a Texas fisherwoman and environmental campaigner who I've interviewed before. But you could think one of these guys could just take it out of their pocket, right? But this is policy. This is not like one item. This is, like you're saying, essentially it's across the board to reduce cost as much as possible, because the less you spend, the more you make, right? The more return on investment.
Yeah, and you know, in the case of BP in this example, it's particularly horrendous, because they did that across the board, 25% cuts twice across all their U.S. refineries at the height of their profit making. So, you know, it was absolutely about the bottom line, and I actually quote from a congressional hearing in my article, a woman whose both of her parents died in that Texas City explosion, and she says, you know, BP killed my parents because they put profits over people. And when you hear the stories of the oil workers from the Gulf who have now finally been freed to talk after signing, being forced to sign documents by Transocean to try and silence them, you know, they are telling truly, truly horrendous stories, you know, that really reminded me of these stories from the BP refinery explosion as well. But that's the other piece to bring in is, we can't just focus on BP. The problem with just focusing on BP is that it makes it seem like it's an isolated company. It was similar with Exxon. You know, the work that I'm trying to do by focusing on Chevron is to highlight that basically if you look at any of these stages of oil operations, there is danger and problems associated with the way that the companies are operating. And what we see industry-wide is that the industry has been able to lobby and spend itself into a situation where we are allowing it to go places it shouldn't go without the appropriate regulatory oversight. And I think, you know, it's not just BP for one, but also it's not just one tool that would have made it okay. So it's possible that that blowout preventer would have helped, but it's certainly no guarantee. And what it sounds like was that it was a series of mistakes that all combined together to create one massive explosion. And I think the lesson to be learned is that there probably is no safe way to do these operations,
yeah, or
guaranteed safe, and therefore we shouldn't do them.
Yeah, at those depths, I mean, 35,000 feet, one of them. But, you know, what we were saying earlier about cost-cutting on the part of BP and probably mm-hmm. all of these companies as well, but tell us some about the extraordinary amount of interference, what's it called, lobbying, right, in the legislative process that BP itself has done over the last couple of years, because you would think they would get away cheaper by not lobbying, putting in these health and safety devices and standards, and now they're going to have to probably pay hundreds of millions, or are they, for this cleanup. So it seems like they're being penny wise and pound foolish, as the old saying goes.
So first of all, in terms of the lobbying, so BP spent $16 million lobbying in 2009. That was its highest lobbying record ever.
I'm sorry, I want you always to repeat these, because, you know, you deal with these facts and figures, and, I mean, your book, The Tyranny of Oil, I mean, treats all of this, so this is just common coin to you, but like I had you repeat the depth of some of those wells, just slowly and again, how much did they spend on lobbyists to influence legislation? That's extraordinary.
$16 million in 1 year. But that's only a tip of the iceberg, because BP, like the rest of the oil industry, has really thrown its money into the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is the primary lobbying body before the U.S. government. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce spends twice as much as the next largest lobbying entity every year. And last year, the next largest lobbying entity was ExxonMobil. So the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, representing all of the industry, also the American Petroleum Institute, lots of other entities that they lobby through, and then their individual company expenditures. So $16 million sounds like a lot. It's just a small piece of what BP actually spent. That's $6 million more than BP spent the previous year, which was also a record-breaking year. And BP also spent, and this is going to sound like nothing, $500,000 in 2008 on federal campaigns. Now, $500,000 sounds like nothing in comparison to $16 million, right?
Right.
But here's the rub. The reason why BP could spend $16 million on lobbying is, of course, we have no limits on how much companies can spend on lobbying. We used to have limits on how much companies could spend on campaigns, which is why they only spent $500,000. We no longer have restrictions on how much corporations can spend on campaigns because of Citizens United. So if we thought that it felt like corporations were influencing campaigns before, just look at the difference between those figures. 500,000 versus 16 million, and imagine now the 16 million going into
campaigns.
Elections.
Yeah, and I should remind people that the Citizens United was a Supreme Court decision that now allows, that recognized corporations as having the rights of free speech and other constitutional guarantees. So, like you and me, they can spend as much as they want. So you can send them your favorite candidate $50, they can give them $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Antonia Juhas. Her book is The Tyranny of Oil. You can go to tyrannyofoil.org. She's also director of the Chevron program at Global Exchange, globalexchange.org/Chevron. A Global Exchange itself is a site well worth looking at. And we're getting towards the end of the show. It seems it's almost reflexively ideological. Just like the car companies, if they would have had any brains, 40, 50 years ago, they would have been on board for a national health program that took all the cost of health insurance off of them and put it on the government like every other industrial country in the world. Same thing here. It seems like they instead of spending these tens of millions of dollars of company funds, they could have done a lot better just by putting in the safety measures needed.
Yes, for sure. They could run their operations you know, that's basically the heart of what we have to do is make sure that for as long as we continue to use oil, and hopefully it's not much longer, we have a heavy hand of regulation and restrictions on this industry. They've proven to us time and time again that they are short-sighted, that they have to see every quarter an increase in profits, and to do that, they cut costs. And we have to say in response, if you're not going to do it, we obviously have to. So we have to challenge their financial lobbying power, their campaign power, with people power that says to our elected officials, this is an issue on which you will be held to account. We will not elect you again. We will not do all the legwork that electeds need to get elected, to help you get elected, unless you take a stand on this issue, because it is obviously literally life or death. And what that means is we have to regulate the industry, restrict where it can go, enforce the rules that we have for oversight, and stay ever vigilant. But it also means that simultaneously our policymakers absolutely have to help us move much more rapidly away from fossil fuels altogether. And we can make, of course, individual actions to make that happen, but those are made much more profound if our policymakers invest in things like mass public transportation that is efficient, affordable, and convenient. If we have mass investments in alternative energy, in alternative energy provision, not just making it exist, but making it available, and really eliminating the $40 billion in taxes and subsidies that go to the oil industry, which clearly doesn't need it, and instead investing that money in making it possible for all of us to move much more rapidly away from our dependence on this industry. And that's ultimately how we hold the industry to account. It's to say, you're not doing a good job giving us energy, and we are going to go somewhere else. And that's, you know, ultimately where our power lies. Restrict it while we're using it. Move as fast as we can away from it. Run, run, run.
That actually would be an excellent final summation of it all. But let me just pose to you, and here, this is the biggest softball question of our interview. Libertarians say that government regulation is bad, and that we ought to let the market sort this all out, and people will choose what is best for them, and what you're advocating, Antonio Yuhas, will just simply interfere with companies' ability to make profits and hire people and keep the economy going.
Sadly, the libertarian view is based on a concept of perfect information, that we can make decisions, that we know all of the technological elements that are required in offshore drilling so that we can make a sound decision on whether we think offshore drilling should happen so that we can then support companies that do it or not. Unfortunately, we simply do not have that type of information. We also know for a fact that the deregulatory push that we've been in since the 1980s is happening at the same time as corporations have grown dramatically in their power and influence, such that essentially we have no appropriate insight into their operations. They are too big, they are too powerful, they have too much money. And while there is this level of corporate concentration and inequality in wealth and access to information, which is, of course, at all-time heights in the United States, we simply cannot trust that we have the adequate information, enforcement, and oversight capacity as individuals within the market to let the market run on its own. We have to have a third party entity that steps in and acts on the public's behalf, that's able to come closer to standing head to head with corporations. Now, at this point, I don't even think the government can do that, which is why at the end of the day, I think we have to look back, just like we did 100 years ago when the oil industry was so big that our government couldn't handle it, and we as a public said, they're too big, democracy can't work this way, and we broke it up. And that was Standard Oil, which was broken up 100 years ago into 34 separate corporate parts. Basically, it's found its way back together again, and I think we have to once again say these companies are too big, they can't be regulated, they can't be watched, they have to be broken up into smaller corporate entities. And if that means that some of them fade away then.
So be it. Sounds like the Terminator. But Antonia Juhas, thank you so much for joining me. Antonia Juhas is the author of The Tyranny of Oil, the world's most powerful industry, What We Must Do to Stop It. It's a couple years old, still absolutely relevant and a must read if you want to find out more about this information. You can go to Antonia's website, tyrannyofoil.org. She directs the Chevron program at Global Exchange. That's globalexchange.org/Chevron. And all of this will be on my website as well, peterwerbe.com. As usual, thanks for joining me on the broadcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this. 101 The Riff.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
Well, that's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a fight on a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts payments for less than you owe. Remove penalties and interest and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you. And to talk about one of the big problems, one of the many problems or the many problems facing our planet. In fact, a sick planet. And I'll make that clear why I'm calling it a sick planet in just a second. So much of what we're facing has cascaded down upon us just recently. The energy crisis, the food crisis, the financial crisis. Well, joining me is someone who has written a book called Sick Planet, Corporate Food and Medicine. His name is Stan Cox, and he's a senior scientist at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas. He's worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture from 1984 to 1996, and he has a doctorate in plant genetics from way out in the Midwest. It's a pleasure to bring to our microphones on the Peter Werby Show, Stan Cox. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be with you.
Now, I think maybe right off the bat, what I found about this book compelling, you have a very kind of conventional description here. A senior scientist, you work for the USDA, and yet this book is very radical. Radical in the sense of going to the root and probably some solutions that people might find, an analysis that people might find extreme. Was there a big transformation in Stan Cox from mainstream to critic on the sidelines?
Not really, Peter. I've been working for a couple of decades in agricultural science, which is about as conventional as you can get. I saw from even back in the 80s that the solutions that we were trying to come up with in a technical sense in the field and in the laboratory weren't ever going to get us anywhere unless there was a bigger change in the overall society and the economy. And so I started studying that in my spare time and writing for web publications, things like that, and realized that each of the individual problems that I was writing about really were all facets of the same big problem, which is the economic system that we're trying to deal with and to squeeze into an earth that isn't big enough for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you certainly, working for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you went through the Reagan administration, the Bush 1 administration, and the Clinton administration. So that puts you in pretty much of a mainstream setting.
And I spent several years in India during that time as well, and to kind of see the other side of consumption in this country.
Mm-hmm. I hear in your voice the accent of you, if you will, of a son of the Midwest. Do you have a direct connection with farming, or was it mostly just academic studies?
Well, actually, I grew up in Georgia. And came to the Midwest on my 21st birthday and have been here since then. But I grew up in a town of 30,000 or so, didn't grow up on a farm.
Mm-hmm. Well, so much for me spotting regional accents. But
well, I've been away a long time, and I probably watched too much TV when I was a kid. And
there you go. Well, tell us about Sick Planet, Corporate Food and Medicine. We depend on corporations for our food. We depend on corporations for our medicine, yet we see increasing signs of a sick planet to the point where it's getting pretty frightening. Well, explain the main thesis of your book.
Well, we have a almost religious belief that that guides our economy and society, that the invisible hand of the market is going to be always the best way to and most efficient way to allocate resources and make sure everybody has what he or she needs. And it, despite the fact that there have been repeated spectacular failures of that market to do that, we're still trying to run things that way. And I wanted to look at a couple of areas of our lives that involve really fundamental necessities, obviously nutrition and the ability to stay healthy. And we've got very dysfunctional systems in both of those areas. In healthcare, for example, it's managing to accomplish a pretty amazing feat of depriving millions of people of healthcare they need, while at the same time producing excessive quantities of healthcare for even more people. We're now 16% of our economy is healthcare. From 2001 to 2006, 1.7 million jobs were created in the healthcare field. In the rest of the economy put together, the net number of jobs created in those 6 years was exactly zero. So pretty much the entire job growth of that period, and it's probably still going that way, was in an industry that is supposed to be keeping people healthy when it's largely doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Well, you would think that if we expend so much on medical care on one hand, and of course, as you indicated, denying many people the full benefits of what's available, we must be a pretty sick nation. Your book is Sick Planet, but if we have to spend that much money and that much resources and corporate profits are so high because of illness, we're not a very healthy society.
Right, and if to stay with healthcare a minute, the industry would actually have it that we all, virtually all of us, are sick. I took eight diseases or eight conditions that are, and you've seen advertisements for all of these, and took the percentage that the pharmaceutical industry gives us for the number of people who suffer from these conditions: erectile dysfunction, female sexual dysfunction, sleeplessness, restless leg, bipolar, irritable bowel syndrome, et cetera. If you do the math and say, okay, if having one of those doesn't affect whether you have the other one, and if you believe the industry that 20% of people have this one, et cetera, that means that over 90 or 95% of Americans have at least one of those and are qualified for medical treatment.
Yeah, what do you think, though, that's inaccurate, or they're overselling it? Restless leg syndrome, that's a new one. I mean, I've heard that recently, but but some of these, but some of these conditions obviously are of great concern. I mean, you know, so much is spent on stomach ailments and sleep deprivation, and irritable bowel syndrome. I mean, a lot of that comes out of the stressful lives we lead, of course.
Yeah, but a lot of the increasing diagnoses of these are a result of the companies going through the medical manuals, finding a condition, say, like restless leg, which my father has a serious case of that, and before it was ever advertised or anything, he sought out help, and the medication has helped him. But they'll go through and find restless leg or bipolar or something, and then expand the definition of it to go from, say, 0.5% of the population to saying, well, actually 20% or something have a mild form of this condition, mm-hmm. and need treatment, and then put those Ask Your Doctor ads on the air. And if you watch the evening news on the networks at night, virtually every advertisement is for one of these prescription drugs.
Sure.
The other way people kind of get roped into the system is over-testing. The estimates in the medical journals say that if you go by medical guidelines, that 43% of the imaging tests that are done are not necessary, shouldn't have been done, 37% of the urinalysis, 32% of biopsies, et cetera. And that statistics show that if 100 people get have multiple tests done, 40 of those people are going to be found to have a problem that they don't really have. And so then they go on from there, kind of move deeper into the medical system from there.
Well, it is. The axiom is that you are sick till proven well.
Right. And,
yeah.
And that has, and the point then of the medical chapters in the book then is that by doing that, we're not only because of side effects of drugs and so forth, but we're undermining the life support systems of the earth that help keep people healthy.
Mike, well, how does that hook together?
Well, there any ramped up economic activity always has ecological consequences. So the average hospital bed generates somewhere between 10 and 50 pounds of waste every day. We've all been in hospitals and seen the huge amounts of plastic and so forth that are used.
Latex gloves, I mean, has always struck me how much they use. That's recent innovation. Yeah.
Right. And then the pharmaceutical industry, that's a fairly dirty industry. And this huge increase in the output of pharmaceuticals has, as in every other industry, led us to other countries to try to get production done cheaper, so that 40% of our bulk drug production now comes from India and China together, and it's headed, they say, for 80% of our bulk drugs. One of the chapters in there, I sort of followed that upstream to a small region in India that has 30 or 40% of India's bulk drug production, and saw the ecological consequences for destruction of their water supplies, air pollution, etc.
The book is Sick Planet, Corporate Food and Medicine. My guest is Stan Cox. He's a senior scientist at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas. Or is it Salina? Which is...
It's Salina.
Salina, okay. I'm doing the Spanish pronunciation. But I think this could lead us into the discussion about corporate food. What is the Land Institute?
We're a nonprofit research institute here. It was established in 1976. I came here in 2000. We're working on developing future farming systems that perform the ecological functions that the prairie did before the European populations came here, say, to Kansas in the mid-1800s. And plowed up the prairie to plant annual crops like wheat. We have a lot of documented problems with soil erosion, water contamination, poor health of people, all kinds of problems that have arisen largely because we're dependent on a small number of annual grain crops. Annual meaning crops that have to be planted from seed every year, meaning that we have bare soil through much of the year. We have soil with no roots in the ground, no living roots, which makes the soil kind of a dead zone for much of the year. Anyway, that's what we're working on, is developing perennial grain crops, which would be a whole new group of crop species that we believe would feed humanity without resorting to as much chemical pesticide use and without soil erosion.
Now, I know, I'm trying to think how long ago, but years and years ago, I'm trying to think, maybe even as much as 20 years ago, I interviewed a couple who was had a vision of bringing back prairie grass to those regions of the middle Midwest, and including Kansas, Nebraska, places like that, and reintroducing the buffalo. Do you remember who they were? Do you know
them? Yeah, those were the Poppers Rutgers University.
That's right.
And they were writing about the, well, they referred to as the Buffalo Commons.
Oh, that's very, very good. Yeah.
And that eventually is the fate of the High Plains, whether we want it or not, because the water resources out there, the underground water that is feeding agriculture out there, is a finite resource. They're mining that water, and once it's gone, short grass prairie and buffalo populations are going to be about it.
Welcome back. Welcome back, let's say. In this idea, though, of having a sustainable wheat crop, that's good, because I thought maybe you were had the Popper vision, because we're all of a sudden looking at a worldwide food crisis with prices rising, production dropping. As in many ways, your book foretold that. Were you surprised to suddenly see this jump into the front page of the papers and on television?
Well, not surprised, because you know, a lot of people working in this area have been saying that it's going to happen one of these days, and nobody knew exactly when. But I think with the passage of legislation, subsidies, et cetera, for biofuels, we pretty much ensured that the food crisis would come sooner rather than later.
Well, I just saw in the New York Times today an article about fertilizer, chemical-based fertilizer, and how, according to this article, how critical it was to crop production, and it showed the immense rise in the use of it throughout the world. Interestingly, though, dropping in Canada and in the European Union. Everywhere else, great rise in the price of it, to the point where the fear, according to the article, was that crop production was going to drop considerably. Did any thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's chapter 6 in my book.
Okay, there you go.
This was exactly what I was talking about there. There's an amazing statistic, but a Canadian academic analyst has calculated that without chemical nitrogen fertilizer, that is using a chemical process to take nitrogen out of the air and put it into a form that we can feed crops with, if that had not been invented, 40% of humanity wouldn't be here today. And that if we suddenly lost that half the world population would not be able to survive. We've become that dependent on getting nitrogen through an industrial process that was originally designed for trying to make explosives, et cetera, but about a century ago.
Yeah, that's why those fertilizers have been used, like at the Oklahoma City
right.
explosion. That was the main basis of it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I know that in Cuba, for instance, they do 80% to 90% organic farming and gardening. And some of the people in a movie I saw recently, they said that they had crop increases, where the article in the New York Times said that without it, as you said, a crop production would be much lower, that manure contains only like 10% of what these chemical fertilizers can contain per pound. So I actually got a little confused as to what's possible or what's necessary.
Yeah, there has been an analysis by one of my colleagues of the dependence of various countries on chemical nitrogen fertilizer, and it all depends on the population of the country relative to the amount of land area they have, and the types of crops they're able to grow. So it ironically, the countries that use some of the largest quantities of nitrogen fertilizer, like the United States, are actually the least dependent on it. We have enough land that if we reduced meat consumption, cut exports and various things, we could grow enough leguminous crops like alfalfa and soybeans that take nitrogen out of the air themselves to provide all of our nitrogen needs and not have to use synthetic fertilizer, whereas certain other countries, Egypt, Bangladesh, some other countries, their very existence depends on having nitrogen fertilizer.
Hmm.
And so when I would go around India, you would see farmers with a pan and literally taking handfuls of this very expensive fertilizer and throwing it around onto the rice paddy to get just enough to get the crop through. They're chronically short there. Whereas here, we put on huge amounts, say on a crop of corn, you have to put on twice as much fertilizer as the crop can actually use just to get it through, to get the yield that that farmers are after.
Mm-hmm. Sick Planet is the book. Corporate Food and Medicine. Stan Cox is my guest, the author. It's published by Pluto Press. You can go to Pluto, like the planet, PlutoBooks.com. There will also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. I'll give that information just in a few minutes. When I mentioned at the beginning of Sick Planet, your book, Stan Cox, being radical, both in the sense of getting to the root, that's appropriate when we're talking about growing food, but also in terms of its analysis and what you propose. And it's, I mean, I just keep getting worried about the passenger pigeon syndrome for the world's population, that there could be just this crash of if all these things, the perfect storm came together. I mean, what's it going to take? Someone asked me, in fact, it was at a showing of this film about Cuba's organic food production, and they said to me, what's it going to take to wake the American people up? And without thinking, I said, catastrophe. And and everybody kind of looked appalled. What do you think? What's going to be the alarm bell that's going to make us wake up?
You wonder at this point, people, what it is going to take. Because I think now you don't have to work nearly as hard as you would have had to work 10 or even 5 years ago to convince people that there is ecological catastrophe looming. I strangely enough, I am more of the mind of the your sort of old school executive or capitalist who says, well, look, we can't any cutback we do or any effort to try to decrease our impact on the planet is going to hurt our bottom line. We're just not going to be able to do it. They've examined the situation, and that's probably a good assessment. I'm much more wary of so-called green capitalists who claim you can have it all. You can have big economic growth, loads of consumer goods, and not have economic or not have ecological impact. It defies logic and theory that's been built up in ecological economics over decades now.
Mm-hmm. If we went to the Land Institute, well, I'm sorry, if we went to sickplanetbook.com, will that link us up with the Land Institute?
Let's see. There's not a link to the Land Institute on that site, but it's just landinstitute.org is the Land Institute's website.
And I think sometimes what makes people uncomfortable about a show and a discussion like this, they wonder, what can I do tomorrow to address this problem? I mean, you're working at the Land Institute in Salina, but is there something that the average citizen can do?
Probably to stay home from the store and go on a consumption strike is one thing. But we need, obviously, a more organized approach to it. But there are a lot of good examples out there of community-supported agriculture programs, co-ops, natural health programs and so forth, but there needs to be a much wider agreement that we have to figure out a way to have an improved life without the kind of growth that we hear every day on the economic news that we have to have, that those things are no longer on a full planet that we have now. Those things are no longer compatible.
No, I think we're going to have to leave it at that because we're out of time with Stan Cox. And here's the information. We've got to make some decisions about what we're going to do as individuals and also, more importantly, what we're going to do as a country and as a culture. The book is Sick Planet, Corporate Food and Medicine. It's published by Pluto Press. You can go to sickplanetbook.com. Thank you so much. Oh, and there'll be a link on my site as well. Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. Stan Cox, thanks for joining me on the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else. This week's featured deal is New Rogel Golf Course in Detroit. All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees, having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research